Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. John Canzano. Raw. Sourced. Fresh. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, built by high-caliber millwrights. This is the Bald-Faced Truth.
2 years ago, I said goodbye to some of the staff on this radio show. Travis Wershkowitz was among them. Right when I learned how to pronounce his last name, he announced as part of the show that he was going off to the Peace Corps. He is back from the Peace Corps, his exclusive tour of Indonesia. I warned him against it. I said it was a terrible decision. Do not go in the Peace Corps. You're going to a Muslim country. You don't know anything about this. What are you going to do down there? You're liable to not come back. He has emerged back, and he says it's the best decision he ever made in his life. So much for my advice. Travis is back in studio. He's among our guests on today's show, and I've dragged him on air here just for a few minutes. How are you, man?
I'm living the dream. Like you said, best decision of my life. It was hard to come back, but it's nice to be in Portland for a little bit.
Now, give us like the Cliff Notes version of Indonesia. For people who haven't been there, what was it like? You walk in as an American.
Yeah, most beautiful country I've been to. I don't have a lot to compare it to, but island country, most populous Muslim country. Biggest culture shock was just getting off the airplane. You're taking a bus and you see six people on a single motor scooter all crammed in, two women each holding a child on the back, with one guy driving it. And, it's the most populated island in the world, 141 million people on an island the size of California. So I learned I was claustrophobic while I was there. But all those people are very kind-hearted, welcomed me into their house and hearts, and I loved it.
We were down at Starbucks when I met you earlier, and I ordered using the mobile app, and you went, oh, you can order using your phone now?
Yeah.
They don't have that in Indonesia.
Not that I saw. They do have delivery. I liked what you said. Uber Eats is pretty much the equivalent here, but... Mm-hmm. Yeah, that caught me off guard.
That was a new, it's like you've been in a coma.
Yeah,
a little bit. American coma for 2 years.
A technological coma, yeah. At least. Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the things that. What is it? How do they treat Americans? First of all.
Oh man, just nice, and that's not limited to Americans. People there are just hospitable to anybody and everybody. But as I was telling you off air, the soft power of America was definitely evident. Of like the power of cool is still there, regardless of politics, anything that might have negative connotation, the power of Hollywood, of how many people knew actors, movies, stuff like that. And then the power of sports. I think that was really interesting to me. I don't think I told you about this, but I met up with a group that played basketball at the local university, and they were the first people. Anybody I'd tell I'm from Oregon, nobody knew that until the basketball people were like, oh, Portland, do you know Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum?
Yeah, like, you're like, I hang out all the time.
Yeah, exactly. My best friends. But those were the people who actually knew where I lived versus... Do you know Los Angeles? Do you know Brad Pitt? Do you know Justin Bieber, even though he's Canadian?
We all know Brad Pitt and Justin Bieber. How about like Alabama Adriana? If like a 5'9" blonde was to show up in Indonesia, would she be like Fonzie?
Yes. Oh, definitely. It's very, because these people, like, that's a weird thing about Indonesia and Java, where I was specifically, is like just how homogenous it is, and everybody looks very similar. Everybody has the same skin tone, the same features. So you see a light-skinned person, and that's just different. There were people who had literally never seen an American before in my village. And so people, a lot of other Peace Corps volunteers, they struggled with the staring and the attention you get. Anywhere you get, people acknowledge you. You're the center of attention at any party, any room, any bus you get on. It's hard to get away. I learned I was claustrophobic and more shy than I realized going in. But that being said, like, I don't know. I remember, this is like maybe a weird comparison, but the first time I ever saw snow when I was 5 years old, I was fascinated by it. I wanted to play with snow. I wanted to look at it. And somebody who's never seen an American before, they're fascinated by that. I don't find anything wrong with people staring at me when they've never seen me before.
I'll get into the Peace Corps. I want to talk about how they watched the Super Bowl. I also, we were talking off air about this. They have Tinder in Indonesia. What is it like to be an American on Tinder in Indonesia?
The odds were definitely in my favor as an American on Tinder. To quote the Hunger Games, I'd say people, I did okay for myself.
I think the phrase was, it's like playing Tinder on God mode.
Yes, that phrase has been tossed around before.
Is that, but how did, like, because you go down there as a single guy, and that was where I was really worried about you. Like, I was like, he's going down there, single American, you're in a country, I Googled it, and I was like, huge Muslim population, how are they going to treat him? Yeah. You dated.
I did. I had a couple of different girlfriends at different times down there. I didn't date anybody in my village. I will say, like, it's still, like, very conservative. It's similar to parts of the U.S. are very conservative, and it's very, if you hit it off with a woman, you're expected to marry her. I think dating's not really a thing, depending, a lot of people, it's very, my host mom, when her daughter had a boyfriend for a long time, my host mom would always say, this is her best friend. And then, her niece would correct her, no, that's her boyfriend. She's like, no, best friend.
Best friend.
So it was very, it's all the devil's in the details, right? So it just depends where you live. In the city, the people that I had my dates with and the girls I saw did not live close to me because I didn't want to give the illusion that there was marriage in my future. I have no idea where my life will take me. And there are people who are fine with that. But in the smaller villages, and it's a conservative society of where if a woman were to come to my house, they would open all the doors and, like, they don't even want the illusion that I'm at home alone with a girl, let alone in the house or in my room alone with a girl. I had a female friend come and visit me and she stayed with a different host family. Even though we had three empty rooms, they wanted her to stay in a different house just for their own comfort level.
Former BFT cast member Travis is with us, Mensa member, for those who are longtime listeners of the show. So you leave, you go to in the Peace Corps, yep. The Oregon Ducks football program falls off, the Blazers kind of move sideways, had a little uptick this last season, Oregon State went through hell in football, also marijuana legalization, yep. There's a dispensary on every corner now in the state of Oregon. What's the attitude towards marijuana in Indonesia?
It's definitely a very anti-drug, anti-marijuana area. My same host mom warned me about drugs. I was telling you, people have been killed in Indonesia for drug possession in the last year or so.
If you have marijuana on you and you're in Indonesia, they get you. That's like that could be the death penalty.
It can be. I don't know the exact details of what leads. I think it's more selling marijuana that would get you the death penalty. But possession is like it can carry up to 5 years in prison, in Indonesian prison.
That's crazy.
But like the other weird thing is it's well known there's a certain part of Indonesia where they're like that's where they grow all the weed. Like people know these things of that's the area. It's known for its weed and its coffee. And even people know people would tell me, like, yeah, they have this weed soup that if you ever go there, you got to try it. I'm like, yeah, but people get, like, arrested for that here. And they're like, yeah, but over there, like...
It's cool there.
Yeah, I guess so.
Travis is with us, former BFT cast member. He's now going into an MBA program at the University of Florida, where he'll go on to do great things, of course. But let's talk about the Super Bowl, because you sent me an email right around the Super Bowl. Yep. You went to a place called At America?
Yep. At America.
At signed America.
Yes, sir.
In Indonesia.
Yep.
What was At America like?
So it was unreal. I went both years. We went the first year and then the second year went back.
First of all, what did you hear about At America first and what proved to be true?
So it is technically a museum, a cultural museum, put on in part by the U.S. Embassy, has some ties to it. They host school trips. People in the Peace Corps took their classes there to learn about American culture. And one part of American culture is the Super Bowl, a very large part for somebody like me. And we were told you go there and they have a big movie theater with the game playing. It has American commercials. It has all-you-can-eat Starbucks and Krispy Kreme. And then we had heard rumors that there was all-you-can-drink beer.
Free Starbucks, free Krispy Kreme.
Yes, and right. Free corn dogs.
And free corn dogs.
Yeah.
That's America.
Yeah, in a nutshell. Yeah. And we were skeptical, so the first time, our friend who likes to tell tall tales had told us all about it, and only four people bought into it, showed up. We went, the legends were true, everything was true, it was all there, it was all free to get in.
Yeah.
Went and we watched.
Who'd you go, like, who went with you?
It was three of my American buddies. So a guy, we had one friend from Connecticut, diehard Pats fan, a dude from El Paso, and then a friend from North Carolina and myself who didn't have, this was the Eagles Patriots Super Bowl, the first one. And my buddy from Connecticut, he won a. They also had a giveaway with free things, so he won a Tom Brady jersey randomly. meanwhile, like Indonesians are getting like Russell Wilson jerseys, who don't know who Russell Wilson is,
right?
But we watched the game, one of the best Super Bowls ever, and we had to console my friend. Luckily, he had free beer to drown his tears in as the Pats lost that devastating Super Bowl.
How many beers do you drink if you're getting free beer at a Super Bowl?
So I think I topped out at about 11 or 12, and we call it. I'll change the names to respect the innocent, but we call it going for a record if you can hit 17. That was the number another volunteer
hit. He had 16 beers.
Yeah, 17 by the end.
17 beers.
Yeah.
What was he like at the end of the game?
He didn't stay conscious for the car ride home. He stumbled a little bit. He took a tumble. There was tiered seating, and he made his presence known. I'll just put it that way.
Ugly America.
Yeah. He represented both the good and the bad.
How did they watch the game? Because the room had to not be filled with Americans. Like, Indonesians are there going, this is America.
So it was, I'd say, 70-30 Americans or expats, because it was in Jakarta. So it's a primary, there's a large expat community. Mm-hmm. And then there's Indonesians who don't know, who I think were friends of people. And they have one guy who I believe is tied to the embassy in some capacity on the microphone explaining the game of football, explaining the cultural significance. Sometimes they'd explain commercials and stuff like that, because that's such a big part of the culture now, even. Sure. And he'd explain the rules of football.
So what is he saying? Like, it's second down, they have four tries.
Exactly. Like, four tries to go for it. They're punting now. That means they're going to kick the ball away, and the other team's going to have possession. And their goal is to get into that marked area. Yeah. So just more or less explaining the game, because nobody... When I try to explain American football, they're like, oh, like rugby. And like, not, no, like, I get where that's your closest comparison, but it's not like rugby.
Fascinated by this. Alabama Adriana, you have a question. He's been in the Peace Corps the last 2 years. What question do you have?
I don't really know. I just think that's really cool. And now you're going to do your master's program in Florida.
Yeah, that's right.
And part of his thing is, I don't know if you knew this, Adriana, but you have to go in the Peace Corps now. Like, that's what happens, because he was sitting in your seat just 2 years ago, Travis, is that right?
Yeah, a little more, 2.5.
Wow. What do you remember of your time on the show? What was it like?
I liked it. Probably the most fun job I've ever had. I think, as cliche as it is, there's nothing better than just talking sports and life for 3 hours a day, every day. I think that's what I like about your show, especially, is it's not necessarily limited to sports. I mean, we're talking about my time in Indonesia right now. I don't know that everybody necessarily cares, but I think
I think people care. I think people are glued to this that are listening to it. And Adriana, what's up?
I did think of a question. Yeah. What are you getting your master's degree in?
Business administration. So I don't know what I'm doing with it, I'll be honest with you. But I got a full tuition scholarship, and that always helps.
That's good stuff. I also, you and I were talking over coffee about sort of how the viewing habits of people have changed in sports with Twitter. And I'm curious, being in Indonesia, you're removed from it. There's a time difference. You're as far away as you can get. And yet people there still knew about CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard. And I'm going to ask this of our audience, sort of the viewing habits of an American sports fan, what they think has changed. What takeaways do you get being far away? How disconnected did you feel from American sports?
So it's a weird, like, I didn't feel all that disconnected. And as I was telling you, it's a testament to how we consume sports media nowadays of, I may not be streaming the game. I may not be seeing every Blazers game, every Ducks game. But I hear you talk about it. I hear five other people talk about it.
So you're listening to the podcast.
I can listen to the podcast. I can read columns. I can follow. And then it's interesting how that shapes my own opinion. Like, my buddy, the friend from Connecticut, we talk and it's like, oh man, I think Zion Williamson's legit. Well, I don't actually know. I haven't seen a single dunk. I've seen a dunk of his, but I haven't seen 40 minutes of him going up. But just everything I hear is he's legit. Now that's my opinion based on nothing I've seen with my own eyes, technically.
Is anyone watching anymore? That's what I wonder.
Yeah. Like, I think select people, like playoffs, big moments, people watch. But the day in, day out, I don't know. Like, I didn't miss it as much as I thought I would be.
When Damian Lillard hits the game 5 shot against Oklahoma City, where are you?
Yeah, so I was at my favorite cafe because they have the fastest Wi-Fi. I had, and it was... That game started at 9 a.m. my time. That happened around 12:20, I think, is when he actually hit that shot. And I know that because beginning at 12 p.m., my stream cut out, and I'm just pressing refresh for 20 minutes. Finally, the stream comes back in, only for me to hear the announcer saying, "That's one of the most incredible shots I've ever seen." But I don't even know who hit it. When I tuned out, the Blazers were down by like 6 or 8 with 6 minutes left. So I don't know if Paul George has hit something incredible. Did Dame do something? Finally, I see it and I see the celebration, but then I'm on Twitter scrolling to refresh to finally see the shot on Twitter 5 minutes later. And you're seeing it from 5 different angles. They had the 4-cam multi-cam where you could see it. And you see it, even though like I missed it in the exact moment. Within 5 minutes, I had seen everything and had my own opinion.
Did you feel like you missed anything because you didn't see it live? Or is it like, oh, you know what? We don't need to see it.
I don't think you need to. Because, I mean, the saddest thing or the best thing, depending on how you look at it, is you have Twitter. And now it's not about, like, it's almost not about having that moment of seeing it. At least, I wish it was. But it's more about what's your opinion on that moment. And I had 200 opinions on that that could shape my own opinion. And it's kind of weird in that maybe I wasn't making my own organic free thought of it, but I could then base it off of others. And I'm somebody who in turn likes to play off of others anyways. So I can see what people like, what I want to tweak, what I do agree with, what I disagree with. And you have all of that at the click
so
of a button.
Have you ever heard the call, the live call, the radio call, the TV call locally of Lillard's shot?
I don't know if I have. I may have, but I may not have.
I'm going to play it here. All right. All right, here's game 5, 37 feet. Here's the Blazers TV call first.
George will defend Lillard. Spread floor. Lillard with 47 tonight. Working it down to 2-1. A deep three.
Oh! What?
Blazers win the series. A walk-off three from Lillard. Damian Lillard from way downtown.
Kevin Calabro on the call there. Here's Brian Wheeler on the radio call.
George, 5 seconds. George backing up. Lillard doesn't want to pick. Dame going for the win. A three-pointer for the game.
Yeah! There it is. There it is. You've heard it now.
I love it.
That's you know, it, to me, it's fascinating to hear your stories. We could do a whole show on this. Yep. But we'll bring you back another time, and if something happens in Florida, we'll drag you back on air.
Of course. I love
it. All right. Travis, I appreciate you, and I want to put this out to our listeners. He mentioned and touched on the way that we're watching sporting events. Are you a live watcher? Are you somebody who watches a game wire to wire? Are you somebody who joins a game in progress only if it's good enough? I think we value our time, and there's so many options today that we're watching and consuming games in different ways than we ever have. I want you to tell me how you watch your sports. 503-417-7575. You can weigh in. And Travis, any of your Indonesian friends going to visit the U.S.? Is that an easy trip?
Inshallah, they will come here. That means God willing. So I got some people that I won't say no, but I can't promise they will either.
What's the language they speak there? What's primary?
They use Bahasa Indonesia. So just Indonesian is the national language, but then they have 300 plus regional languages. They have more languages than anywhere in the world.
How fluent are you?
I tested at advanced was my level when I got out of there, but I'd say I can get around. It just depends on the subject matter.
Like what can you say? Give us a, you know, if I gave you a phrase to say, you could say it?
Mungkin aku bisa sedikit Bahasa Indonesia. Maybe I can speak a little.
There you go. Did you know Alabama Adriana speaks gibberish?
I did not. That's impressive.
Alabama Adriana, can you repeat his sentence in gibberish?
Mitigay bitigay itigay kitigay spitigay kitigay litigay titigol.
Ooh.
See?
Yeah.
All right. Leave it right here. Tell me how you're consuming your sports. 503-417-7575. We're going to talk about Bull, Oregon Ducks, mystery, enigma. We'll talk about him later in the show. Also, we'll hear from an expert in the NBA who has some solutions for the Blazers. A lot of people talk about the problems that are that teams have. Hey, they need this. They need to do this. They need a power forward. They need a small forward. Very few people actually offer solutions. We'll be talking later in the show with somebody who has solutions for the Blazers. Also, for those of you out there who are interested, we will give you an update on the Oregon Ducks and Oregon State football seasons that are ahead. Important game, August 31st for Oregon against Auburn in the state of Texas. Is it true that if Oregon loses that game, it means the whole conference is out of the college football playoff picture? We'll talk about whether or not that is true later in the show. But I want to spin out of the interview that I just did with Travis Wershkowitz, who is a former member of this show. He was part of the crew 2+ years ago, worked a couple years on this radio program before we kicked him out and said, you're too smart to be here. You're a Mensa member. You need to go on and do something productive with your life. He joined the Peace Corps. You heard his interview. Maybe you didn't. But he talked about how they view American sports and the fact that here he was a world away from the Super Bowl, drinking free beer, eating corn dogs, felt like he was just as connected as anything because of technology. How do you watch your sporting events? What has changed for you over the years? Let's get real about your habits. Only you know your habits as a sports fan. I will be honest with you about my habits. I want to hear yours, though. How are you watching? How are you consuming your sports? Are you watching it all live? Are you on Twitter? And when you see that a game is getting interesting, do you then seek it out? Are you streaming? Are you a cord cutter? Are you somebody who has the NFL Sunday ticket on DirecTV and that's the only reason you have DirecTV? I want you to tell me how you're consuming your sports. 503-417-7575 is the number. Let's go out to the phone lines. Let's go to Dame in Tualatin, who's called in about consumption of sports. Go ahead, Dame.
Hey, John. Appreciate the show. Big fan here.
Thank you.
Just wanted to say my piece. I think you have to talk about social media and people's attention spans. I mean, you look back in history, people used to be able to watch baseball for hours. It was America's game. But nowadays, I mean, I turn a baseball game on. I can't watch it for more than an inning. Sometimes it takes 30 minutes, it feels like, just for the pitcher to, you know, decide the pitch in between pitches. But I think for basketball and something that's more high octane, a sport like that, that Blazer game, for instance, I couldn't take my eyes off of, and the finals as well, rooting for the Warriors dynasty to finally end. That was also another example of something I couldn't, you know, I could watch every second of that game. But a sport like baseball, I could see why people, you know, might check in on Twitter rather than just watch it all the way through.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Opens a line at 503-417-7575. Here's my viewing habits. I used to be that kid that would join the pregame show, watch the pregame show, watch the game, stay with the game. I'd leave the game on for the halftime analysis. I'd come back and watch the third quarter. Maybe at halftime I'm getting a snack or using the bathroom, but I'm back watching the game. I watched every second of an NFL game, and I picked one game. I was tuned into it. Fantasy sports, I thought, changed the way that I watched sports or consumed it, in that I found myself channel surfing a little more, checking up, you know, and now that you have the technology, you have the ability to be on a mobile app, or you have the Red Zone channel or the Fantasy Football channel where they're just showing you teams when they get in scoring position. I have found myself over the years kind of watching that. I'll be honest, too. It's rare when I watch a game that I'm not paid to watch wire to wire. Like, I watched every second of the Ducks NCAA tournament run and the Oregon Ducks women going to the Final Four. I couldn't take my eyes off it. Blazers in the playoffs. But a rank and file regular season game, I do find myself kind of checking in second quarter, going to see what else is on. You know, I have daughters that are 3 and 5 now, and it's bath time for them. And then I'm kind of following on Twitter loosely. And then the game's getting interesting. And I've literally, on multiple occasions, as the kids are getting ready for bed, told my wife, I got to go. This game's late in the fourth quarter. And I go and I'll go downstairs and I'll turn the TV on just to watch the end of the game, because that's the most important part. How are you consuming sports? How has it changed over the years? 503-417-7575. Ben's in Beaverton. Ben, go ahead.
Hey, John. Thanks for taking the call. Well, for me, it's like the other caller alluded to. Like, when it comes to football, I'm going to watch pretty much wire to wire. If it's a team that I'm invested in, if it's, you know, something like, because I'm a transplant, my team is, you know, Arizona, you know, I'd rather jab hot pokers in my eyes than watch a Seattle game.
Right.
So, you know, with that, but, you know, like, the nice thing about football in the NFL is it's kind of appointment watching where you know the games are Thursday, Sunday, and Monday, and it's set. When it comes to, like, baseball and basketball, the games vary. So, yeah, I'll find myself channel surfing on those things. But I think Travis pointed out something that was incredibly astute, and we kind of just breezed over it, but I think it's something that happens is I like to watch the game live because I do like to experience the drama of the moment. And what he talked about is now people tend to weigh in their opinion on the moment.
Yeah.
And I think that's an incredibly astute way of looking at it because everybody seems to have opinion. But for me, I think you're really robbing yourself if you deny the opportunity to experience the moment. Because when I break it down, that Damian Lillard shot, the thing is I was completely relaxed in that moment because at that point the game was tied and I was like, he's going to launch it up, and no matter what happens, the worst thing is we're going to overtime. So to me, it was an amazing shot, but it was more of a relaxed shot, not nearly like it was when he hit the shot with the rocket.
Yeah, and I think you're right in that there is something about – there's something old school about seeing the moment as it was. Like, how many people saw the Damian Lillard 37-foot dagger? How many people saw it? Raise your hand. Not if you're driving. Just give me a nod. But – actually saw it, not a replay, not a day later from five angles, not on social media, but how many people were either in person or watching it on television and saw it. And I think in the Portland metropolitan area, you'd get a lot of people raising their hand. But I think you get the whole country who would tell you they saw that shot because they saw it on replay. And I don't know that if you had it on, you know, in a vacuum of only seeing it on replay or social media, that you would have the context of that game, the 50 points, how dominant he was, maybe the series, the season. You had to be following it from start to finish to truly appreciate how important. Like, the celebration afterwards wasn't just about him hitting a game-winning, series-ending shot. It was a catharsis for a franchise that had had trouble getting out of the first round and had entered that series with a 10-game losing streak in playoff games. 503-417-7575. Tell me how you're watching games. I want to know how you're watching your sports, professional, collegiate, basketball, baseball, NFL, NHL, soccer, you tell me. You watch it in person? How has it changed over the years? Are you watching on TV? Do you watch full games? Do you watch parts of games? Do you flip around? Are you only in it for your fantasy league teams? And is this how you've always been as a sports fan? 503-417-7575. Hulu has live sports. I know, because that's the direction that we've gone in our household. I'm also trying to work with my parents, who are in their 70s, on getting them to cord cut. That's not easy. But I want to know your sports, sort of your habit now as a viewer. Josiah's on the board today. He's in the seat normally occupied by Peter Sampson and Bobby. And Josiah, how are you watching games now, and how is that different for you?
I'm a big-time streamer, online streamer. I use Reddit a lot. And it was a very sad day yesterday, actually, because the NBA subreddit got banned. So
okay, I saw that, but tell our listeners who don't have any idea, like, how are you watching on Reddit, and what's NBA subreddit?
It's just like a page that people, like, just fellow Reddit people go on and just post links to games, you know, and it's really easy. You click on there,
you go right to the game,
and it just, you watch one ad and it just pops up easy. And now that's gone. So I don't know what I'm going to do next season for NBA, but hopefully the NFL one doesn't get banned.
There is an NFL. So for listeners who are frustrated or maybe don't have television, but just have maybe access to a computer, then go on Reddit, find the NFL Reddit.
Yep.
And there are links to all the games.
Yep, and I watch Red Zone on that too, actually.
It's fascinating.
It's amazing. I love it.
And see, I think there was probably a segment of the audience that didn't even know that existed. Like, I didn't, until yesterday, I didn't know there was NBA Reddit.
Yeah, it was a big time thing on Twitter yesterday. I was pretty sad when I saw it.
And so, how are your habits different? Do you watch whole games or are you bouncing around a lot?
During the playoffs, I watch whole games. I watch, obviously, my favorite teams whole games. But say in the regular season during NFL games or NBA games, I check my Twitter. I'm on Twitter. Yeah. I'm just browsing back and forth. And then if it's the fourth quarter and it's close, then yeah, I'll tune in.
Yeah, I don't think anybody, I'm having a hard time finding people that watch Wire to Wire. And like, I will, in the middle of the game, I'll mow the lawn, but I'll have my phone with me and I'll like, mid-mow, I'll check Twitter to see the score, see if anything crazy has happened. And if something has happened, I, like we were talking about in the opening segment, I don't feel like I've missed it because I can see the replay of it.
Exactly. And it's just so quick, too, on Twitter. Like, they'll have a replay of like, something big, like, in 20 seconds.
503-417-7575. We have two lines open. Mark's in Portland. Mark, welcome to the show. How are you watching?
Wire to Wire. I'm your guy. I'm the Wire to Wire guy because I don't have any social networking, no. No Facebook, Twitter.
You're truly a throwback.
I got to have DirecTV though, because I'm going to watch all eight NFL games at 10 o'clock till 1 o'clock. Yeah, with the red zone, all the channels going at once. And then I got to watch the St. Louis Cardinals, who I've been in love with since the 60s. So I watch probably 135 of their games. Maybe I'll play chess on my phone with a bunch of other people while I'm watching the game. Do people do that? I mean, you could kind of multitask, but John, I think I came up in a different era where baseball was more popular than football. Yeah. And like your dad and my dad, they never stopped talking about baseball. Rocky Marciano wanted to be a baseball player. Everybody wanted to be a baseball player in the 60s and even the 70s. And I think if these kids, millennials, were taught the game a little better, like at playoff time, I'd way rather watch Major League Baseball playoff game than an NBA playoff game.
Yeah,
way more exciting to me.
Maybe it's because I grew up with baseball, but appreciate the call, Mark. I am one of these people that does enjoy the pace of a baseball game, and maybe it's because my life feels busy in so many other ways. I said to my wife, I think it was yesterday, we were talking, and I said, I wish I just had 2 more hours in each day to get done, because I end the day with like 4 or 5 things that I need to get done. I know I need them to get done. I feel like I'm busier than ever. We've got 3 daughters. I've got about 3 jobs. There's the nonprofit lurking in the background that's running and keeps you busy with stuff. And the lawn needs to be mowed and stuff needs to happen. And it's like this American treadmill that we're all on. We all feel insanely busy. And I do feel like sometimes being at a sporting event like a baseball game that has a nice, leisurely pace, Harry Carey, Vin Scully pace, that does appeal to me. 503-417-7575. James is in Eugene. James, what's up?
Hi. Yeah, I like to watch Wire to Wire, and I used to watch more NBA, March Madness, NFL, college football. I'd sit down 8:30 in the morning on Saturday and watch college football for 12 hours till 8:30 at night.
What changed? What causes you not to watch as much?
The officiating combined with some of the rule changes. If there's too many replays, if there's a replay that should take 30 seconds, but it takes 5 minutes and there's a couple of those, I can't watch. Or if there's one of those, and it's happened a lot in college recently, those helmet to helmet where the quarterback ducks and spins to get out of the pocket and the defender hits him, and he gets ejected from the game for a hit that's obviously nothing he can do anything about and not aggressive and not meant to hurt anybody, just part of the game. So I quit watching the majority of it basically because of the rule changes and then some bad officiating, like the St. Louis Boston hockey trip that didn't get called.
Yep.
And last year there was, I don't know if you remember, but there was something in a New Orleans game in the playoffs that caused,
pass interference.
Some helmet to helmet, some little thing that didn't get called. And that's exactly what they're supposed to be watching, for. So I can sit down and watch golf Saturday and Sunday all day long. The refs almost never get involved.
Appreciate the phone call, James and Eugene. 503-417-7575. Tell me how your habits have changed. We'll talk bowl and some college football coming up in the 1 o'clock hour. NBA in the 2 o'clock hour, including some solutions for the Trailblazers and whether or not Damian Lillard's Supermax is good or bad news. By the way, is Al-Farouq Aminu going to be on the Blazers roster next season or no? We'll get some answers on those things in the 2 o'clock hour. But in the meantime, our big splash is coming up. Plus, I want more of your phone calls. 503-417-7575. do you consume your sports? I want you to tell me how you've changed. I want you to be honest about how you've changed over the years as a sports fan. 503-417-7575 is the phone number. You can weigh in there. I want to thank Oregon Blinds. They are the presenting sponsor of the Bald-Faced Truth Foundation's 6th annual Celebrity Golf Tournament. It'll be taking place a week from this Friday at the Reserve Golf Course. A live broadcast will happen during this radio show on Friday, June 28th. Celebrity golfers include Bill Shonley, the mayor of Rip City, Miss Oregon, Neil Lomax, Chris Miller, a lot of local television personalities, both baseball coaches at Oregon and Oregon State, the new hires there. It'll have television coverage from all four of the TV stations in Portland, plus statewide radio broadcast. Is there a golf tournament for charity in the state of Oregon that has a larger footprint than this one? I don't think there is. I don't think there's more media coverage, certainly. And for me, I'm interested in it because the golf tournament helps fund Camp Exceptional. It is the Bald-Faced Truth Foundation summer camp for special needs and non-special needs kids. That'll be taking place also this summer period, July 15th through the 19th. And by the way, today's the last day if you're going to sign up for Camp Exceptional. There are just a couple spots left. You can do that at campexceptional.com. How have your viewing habits changed as a sports fan? Plus our big splash in this segment, Ed's in Corvallis. Ed, how have you changed?
Well, I'm retired now, so I think maybe Technology's changed it, but retirement's given me a lot more time to spend watching sports, so that's sort of the first thing. But I do still like to watch them live. When I can, though, I will actually watch the replay of a game. If I see a Duck game or something live, I'll actually go back and watch the replay, which is great. But the other thing is I listen to a lot of Sirius XM sports live, because on the apps you can listen to my favorite baseball team, which is the Cleveland Indians, and I plan my lawn cutting and a lot of my outdoor activity around when it's scheduled. When the Women's World Cup was on, Fox Sports had it running live, and I was able to get a lot of lawn and a lot of outdoor work done listening to the matches, and then I'd go back and watch sort of the highlights of the goals, but it's sort of fun listening to that. And actually, I went to the Blazer game. We were talking about OKC, and I was in Mexico for the fifth game. So I went to the second game, and I was really into that series. And for the fifth game, I had to figure out how to watch it in Mexico. And it was very hard listening to a Spanish announcer trying to watch it. I was able to get Sirius down there, but it was delayed. But it was very hard to try to watch that live. So I actually saw the shot with Spanish, and then figured out a little later how to listen to the shot online. But it was, the things are so different with the tech.
I actually do like the foreign calls,
Well, if you don't know what's going on. Tiene altura, tiene profundidad, va a llegar, va a llegar. Ganó, lo ganó, ganó, lo ganó, ganó, lo ganó, ganó, lo ganó.
That needs to be my ringtone. I need to wake up to that every day. Rocky is in Portland. Rocky, how have you changed?
Oh, gosh. I'm not sure if I've changed as much as I've had to adapt. Just like the previous caller said, I think just having more stuff online. I do have ESPN Plus, which gets me a lot of coverage of games I like to see. The Lillard shot was, for me, I was in Hood River fishing, and went to a bar after fishing, and the game wasn't on the bar, and I'm like, what's going on here? This isn't the bar. And had them put on the game, and it was quiet for the first or second and third quarters. And then they put the game on, fourth quarter on the noise, and then all of a sudden, everyone became a Blazer fan in the bar. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah, and I think you said something I think really astute there, that you've had to change more than, you know, you've had to adapt to technology. And I think sometimes the big challenge is, and I know this happens to me on social media and in my email inbox, is the game will start and I get inundated with people who are going, how do I find the game? How do I find the game? And it becomes a task. And I know back in the day, what did you do? You picked up the Oregonian or you picked up your local newspaper and they had the TV listings. I know I did that every morning. I'd pick up the TV listings. I'd look and say, okay, what time's the game on? What channel is it on? I don't think people do that anymore. I think they just go hunting and pecking for the game, and it has become trickier to kind of find the game, find the best location for the game and all that stuff. All right. Every day on the show, we give you the Big Splash. It is the one thing in sports you need to know, and today's no different.
This is the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it. Sir, down there. Must be
the Big Splash.
Well, there are three teams sitting at the top of the NBA draft heap that everybody thinks have a distinct advantage over the rest of the field. After number three, it sort of drops off into a murky who's going to go fourth, fifth, eighth, tenth question for the NBA teams. The Knicks, according to report, have declined a trade offer that would have sent the number three overall pick to the Atlanta Hawks in exchange for the number eight and the number 10 picks. The Knicks, well aware that there are three players in this draft that seem to be head and shoulders above the others, saying 8 and 10 might not be worth it. Duke's R.J. Barrett is projected to be the number three pick in this draft. By the way, Darius Garland, who went to Vanderbilt, recently told ESPN, by the way, that he's the best guard in the draft. He's widely viewed to be a top five pick. Well, the Knicks are going to bring him in and look at him, but R.J. Barrett still projected to go third. By the way, the Pelicans will acquire the fourth pick as part of that trade that will soon become official, Anthony Davis to the Lakers. But a lot of people trying to get up to the top three, and of course, if you're four through five, six, seven, eight, it's a tougher question. It leads me to Bol Bol. I wrote a column about him this morning. It's on Oregon Live. I am perplexed when it comes to Bol. He's 7'2". He's 19 years old. He obviously has NBA DNA, his dad playing in the league. I know that he had, or it's rumored that he had a great workout. He's having good workouts. The pre-draft workout went well. And quote-unquote, his stock is supposed to be rising, all of that stuff. But I think he's such an interesting, puzzling, murky, frail, head scratcher of a prospect that I'm really interested to see what the NBA teams do with him. I had three NBA teams reach out to me as part of their diligence. And by the way, for people who don't think the NBA teams do their homework, I pulled out of my file cabinet this morning the pre-draft investigation that the Blazers did on Zebo. Josiah, I'm holding it here in my hands. Can you describe what this looks like to the average, you know, what would you describe to friends?
That just looks like a folder that you would study with or something. A lot of homework.
Yeah, it's like it's not as big as a phone book, but
no.
It's got some tabs in it. I'm going to let you take a look at it during one of the breaks, but the Blazers did this report on Zebo.
That's just a one-player report?
One player.
This is about like 70 Zach pages
Randolph.
In there, probably.
This is Zach Randolph's Ooh. Pre-draft report, and this has nothing to do with basketball. This whole report is on what was he like at age 14, 15, 16, Jeez. 17, 18, interviews with his principal, driving record, everything, right? Like, when he's 14, he got apparently went into a Walmart and shoplifted a pair of slacks. It's in there. And it gives you the lengths to which NBA teams go when they are investing a guaranteed first-round draft pick in a guy. So what I'm saying is, by the time the NBA teams got around to saying, okay, let's reach out to the sports columnist at the Oregonian to see if he has anything to say about Bol, I mean, they have talked to everybody. And in my conversations with these NBA people, the question that keeps coming up when it comes to Bol Bol is, does he have the work ethic? Does he have the motor? Does he love basketball? Is he engaged? Is he aloof? And he's getting these questions, I think, justifiably so, because he has been a hard guy to get to know, even as a media member. And you may know this as a Duck fan. If you watched him this season, he only played 9 games. He was aloof. There were times where he looked super engaged. Of course, he's 7'2". He's crazy long. He can shoot a 3. His ball handling skills are decent for a guy of his size, maybe decent or better. Sometimes he's a little overconfident in it, I think, and it cost him. But I think he's a really interesting prospect. But the questions are all about how engaged is he? And one of the NBA GMs that I talked to said to me that the NBA is a league that gives players a reason to quit every day. Guaranteed contracts, injuries, competition never stops coming at you. It's a fierce schedule, 82-game regular season, plus the preseason and training camp. And so I want to talk about Bol Bol and whether or not an NBA team picking at 10, 11, 12, 15, 19 should be interested in him. We'll talk about that coming up in the 1 o'clock hour, plus Punch It audio and much more. For those of you listening via podcast, make sure that you subscribe to the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show and give us a review. It helps other people find us. Subscribe. It's free. Why wouldn't you subscribe? And also, we've had 1 hour of great radio in which we've talked about Indonesia and other things. Leave it right here.
John Canzano, raw, sourced, fresh. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, built by High Caliber Millwrights, this is the Bald-Faced Truth.
OJ Simpson's on Twitter. I don't know if you've noticed this.
Oh my gosh.
Josiah, I was on Twitter a couple days ago, and I saw a fierce debate about OJ developing on the horizon, and we'll kick it around this hour. I don't want to do it right now, but I want our listeners to hang on to this thought. Is it disrespectful? I don't know if that's the right term. Is it poor form to follow OJ on Twitter? People are getting a hard time for it. And I think you got to figure out what Twitter's about for you and social media is about. But OJ is obviously trying to make a comeback. He made a video. I'll play portions of that video coming up. But I first want to play Punch It audio. But we'll talk OJ, we'll talk Bol Bol, and much more in this hour. But first, Punch It audio. It's the best sound from all around, and it never disappoints when we do it every day on the show. I want to put this OJ talk off for a little bit because I have too much to say about it, and I don't want to limit it to like 8 minutes of me talking about OJ.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It audio,
presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
I'm trying to figure out who Bol Bol is going to be in the NBA draft. Like, you know, who do you compare him to? NBA draft analyst Mike Schmitz compares Vanderbilt's Darius Garland to Damian Lillard. Punch it.
On this edition of Scouting the Draft, I'm going to show you why Darius Garland has a chance to be the next Damian Lillard.
Garland on the reverse.
Darius Garland can do it
all the way to the hole. Darius Garland.
Marvel, there goes that man.
There are a lot of aspects to Garland's game that resemble Portland's star point guard. Now, it starts with Lillard's range. You cannot go under ball screens against this guy. He will pull up from deep, unwavering confidence. Darius Garland, very similar. You can't go under pick and roll. He will make you pay. Always on balance, simple, clean, compact mechanics. Now, Lillard, one of the best off-the-dribble shooters in the NBA, and he loves that step back going left. Garland, very similar. Explosive pound dribble, always on the hop, always on balance. That sets up their change of pace. Teams sit on that left hand, stomp dribble step back, and that allows Garland to explode to the rim. Then lastly, Lillard's ability to play off the ball. He can fit with a guy like CJ McCollum because he can shoot it off the catch. Very similar for Darius Garland. Whether it's spot-ups, whether it's handoffs, he can play off of other guards as well. Look at that deep range. Like I said, always on balance. Tremendous touch. So if Darius Garland is able to put those type of skills to use in the NBA, we might be talking about him in the same ilk of a guy like Damian Lillard.
Is that fair? That I always wrestle with this kind of stuff. When you hear draft time come around, Vanderbilt player who has not played an NBA minute being compared, maybe, could be, might be, as good as Damian Lillard. What's wrong with being the first Darius Garland? Vanderbilt guard declaring himself the best player in the draft. The Knicks are going to bring him in and look at him. They've got the 3 pick. But I just think we're getting too far ahead of ourselves sometimes, especially with the draft, as we try to compare players. That said, I'm looking for a comparison for Bol Bol. Is there a player like him? And don't give me Kevin Durant. I keep people here saying, well, he's long like Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant was different. Kevin Durant could handle the ball, play guard. Kevin Durant could be your 2. Is your 2. But Bol Bol, they're just not a comparison. Show me a player who has mattered in the NBA that is Bol Bol. I'm struggling to find it. In Toronto, the parade wasn't all happy. Gunshots, people injured, 4 gunshot victims. Toronto's police chief, Mark Sanders, talking about it. Punch it.
We know that there are 4 victims right now that have gunshot wounds. None of them are life-threatening at this point in time. But I'm grateful that the resolve to the situation was as quick as it was, and we were able to continue on with the rest of the event the way that we were able to seamlessly.
Yeah, it was a seamless event, except for what has become all too frequent in American news. Gunshots, people injured, shouldn't happen when people are gathered anywhere. And, of course, yesterday cast against the events at a courthouse in Dallas. It makes me shake my head at where we are, how acceptable it's become, how typical it's become. Shouldn't be that way. Shopping mall, theater, school, parade, nothing seemingly off limits. Makes me sad, sad for our country. Daryl Morey, Rockets GM. Does Chris Paul want to be traded? Here's the Rockets GM. Punch it.
No, he doesn't want to be traded. There's been a lot of reports about how they had tension. It's a really been odd to me because 2 high-level competitors, they're going to have tension on the bench. I mean, it's going to happen, and it probably happened, 30, 40 times last year where the team on the bench is having a heated discussion about how to beat the other team. It's really surprising to see all the noise about that.
I don't know. I don't think it's that surprising, and I get why he's saying that, but you've got James Harden and Chris Paul seemingly, reportedly, having issues, 2 star players, 2 egos, tentpole guys on that roster. When things don't go right, those 2 guys are going to be more unhappy than just about anybody. You're going to have problems there. Going to the NFL, where John Elway's talking about Pat Bowlen, and again, kind of a sobering day for Broncos fans as the passing of Pat Bowlen, who died from complications of Alzheimer's. Punch it.
The one thing that I think about Pat when I think about him and this football team was he ran this football team with his heart and not his pocketbook. The players felt that, and that's where when you talk about the relationships that he had with the players, why was he so close to the players? Because I think Pat never allowed the money to get in the way of that.
He was a cool dude as an owner. And Elway said that. And I thought that was interesting. Like, at your funeral, if you're an NFL owner, if you could have a star player go, that was a cool dude. And people may remember the Broncos winning. They may remember the 75-year-old Bowlen being a mainstay at Broncos games in this last season. But it was John Elway talking about how, hey, on the worst days of the franchise, having a owner around who sort of understood the journey and was willing to invest in the journey and was there as a fan in a lot of cases was an advantage. I feel like we're seeing a lot of this, and maybe it's just a generation of owners where we're seeing, you know, you look up and the owners are all in their 70s. You're sort of seeing the old generation of owners in football and in and the NBA. We're watching them pass. It feels like every year. Paul Allen, of course, Pat Bowlen. You go down to New Orleans where the owner passed last season, and feels like that just seemingly happens. Joe Ellis, he is the president and CEO of the Broncos. He talked about Pat Bowlen as well. Punch it.
He was one of the greatest contributors in football history. Everything he did for this team, for the league, for our community, and he left an indelible impact on so many during his 35 years as owner of this team.
LeVar Ball speaking out, talking about his son now traded to the Pelicans, among other things. Here's LeVar. Punch it.
I told you, they let go of the best thing they had going for them. No. I told them, you get the ball, boys, you can survive this. Now you can't. But like I said before, these suckers, I'm playing chess. Y'all playing checkers.
LeVar Ball, it might be the best part of the trade for the Lakers. You know, LeVar Ball no longer around, no longer quotable. Might be the best part of this trade for the rest of us. That LeVar Ball, Lonzo gone, another kid playing overseas. Seemingly this big baller brand doesn't feel as big. Matt Prem, 24/7 Sports, was on yesterday's BFT radio show. I asked him about the Oregon Ducks. What do they have to prove this season? He pointed to the fact that they don't have a quality win over a great opponent on the road. Punch it.
They haven't beaten a legitimate team on the road. You know, I think that's Mario Cristobal talked a lot about that was being, you know, getting over the hump of getting a road win last year, and they did it twice. And now I think that, you know, one of the goals for this team is go away from Austin and beat a legitimate team and then do it again.
They're going to have an opportunity on August 31st. They're at Auburn. Other key road games, they're at Stanford on September 21st. That would be a big one for them to get. Washington on October 19th. USC on November 2nd. Arizona State on November 23rd. You look at the road games for Oregon this season. Those are them. Auburn, Stanford, Washington, USC, Arizona State. Those are all the hard teams. They play all the tough teams on the road. And so I am a little worried about the fact that they hadn't answered that question. They didn't do it last season. They went on the road last year. They beat Cal. But, you know, they lost at home to Stanford. They obviously went on the road to win the Civil War, but what was that? So I'm looking at Oregon this season, and yeah, you might have questions about who's going to catch the football and how good are they going to be on defense and how will the new coordinator be and will Herbert lead and all that stuff, but they haven't really broken through on the road, and I think it's a great point. And when I reel off those schools, it's not like they're getting, you know, the Colorados on the road this year or Montana or Nevada on the road. That's not happening. It's Auburn. It's Stanford. It's Washington. It's USC. It's Arizona State. Those are the toughest games they play. Josiah, I reeled that off. You started nodding.
I'm nervous as a U of O grad for this year. It's a big year.
They've got to break through. Like this, yeah. You can't waste Justin Herbert coming back.
You were talking about last year's road rows, and if you forgot to mention the Arizona game, 44-15 to lowly, yeah, Arizona on the road. It's a big year for that coaching staff. Let's see if they can get them ready.
Coming up, we're going to talk OJ. I don't know if you're following OJ on Twitter. I will play OJ Simpson, his video that he put out as part of his first tweet. He asked a fantasy football question on Twitter an hour ago. Also, there have been some threats that are going back and forth. And by the way, O.J. Simpson's Twitter account allegedly sent a series of menacing direct messages, including a string of knife emojis, to a parody account that skewered the disgraced football star. People are taking offense at that. By the way, the Twitter account that was mocking him is called @KillerO.J. Simpson. Is having a little back and forth with the real OJ. If you follow OJ on Twitter, is it poor form? We're going to talk about that and other things coming up. If you have an opinion on that, I want to hear from you. 503-417-7575. Do you follow him? Now that you know he's on Twitter, will you follow him? You tell me. You got the bald-faced truth. I'm on social media. Maybe you're on social media. I don't know. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Facebook with the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. I'm on Twitter, of course, at John Canzano BFT. But just a few days ago, I became aware that O.J. Simpson had opened a Twitter account. Now, there are parody O.J. accounts out there that make fun of O.J., but O.J. posted this video on Twitter. He's seemingly in his backyard talking here. This is his very first tweet that he put out.
Hey, Twitter world, this is yours truly. Now, coming soon to Twitter, you'll get to read all my thoughts and opinions on just about everything. Now, there's a lot of fake OJ accounts out there, so this one, at the real OJ32, is the only official one. So, this should be a lot of fun. I got a little getting even to do. So, God bless. Take care.
OJ posted that. He soon had 100,000 followers, then 200,000 followers, then 500,000. Yesterday it was at 586. Today it's at 727,000 followers. He's having some problems on Twitter as well because there are some parody accounts that are making fun of him that he has taken offense to. I don't think he's very good at this. He's new to it. He is going after a parody account of OJ that's called at Killer OJ Simpson. He apparently sent direct messages to this account in which he said, "You think I'm playing? I'll come for you. I'm going to cut you. You're next. I'm going to find you." Everything that like a parody account would probably love. OJ's playing right into it. If you follow OJ, I have not followed him. I've been reluctant to do it because I feel like if I follow him, I'm validating him. I'm justifying him. I'm, you know, giving him my attention. And that's what he wants. And for all I care, OJ should rot. But if you follow OJ, is it poor form? 503-417-7575. Adriana, poor form to follow him or no?
I'm not going to. I think a lot of people are just going to follow to keep up with what's going on. I don't think they're following him in support, but I think they just want to see what everybody's talking about, what all the business is about.
Can you imagine OJ trying to send a direct message on Twitter, finding the knife emoji? 16 times he sent it to this parody account.
Yeah, but those like screenshots of messages and stuff can be photoshopped. I'm not saying that it didn't happen, but they can easily be photoshopped.
Could be. His lawyer did not return messages to the New York Post. They're saying it is a real account, but you won't follow him?
No, I'm not going to.
Josiah?
I don't think I'm going to follow him either.
Why?
It's just, I don't like the guy at all. I've seen all the documents. Obviously, I wasn't old enough to remember all that stuff in the 90s, but he's just the epitome of what's wrong kind of with this country and with like media overall and everything.
I want to put this out to our callers. Will you follow him? Should you follow him? Is it poor form to follow him? What do you make of OJ in particular trying to reemerge in the public? Like, he's down in Vegas, I guess. Should he just stay lost?
I just feel like it's a giant spectacle. Like, he's probably just doing it for the publicity as if he didn't have enough. And
exactly.
So don't give him what he wants.
He just doesn't have any self-awareness either.
He's just making a spectacle, and I'm not falling for it.
Let's go to the phone lines. I want you to weigh in as well. Dre is in Portland. Dre, what do you think?
Dre, first of all, I don't follow anybody but your radio station.
Thank you, man.
That's it. I'm being straight up. I don't have the FaceTime. I don't got the Insta Facebook. don't have all that stuff, man. I don't do that. My thing is this. Why would you want to follow an idiot in the first place?
True.
This dude is coming out talking about, I got some unfinished business. The unfinished business should be trying to find out who killed your wife, man. I'm just saying. Everybody responding back to you and all sort of stuff, and you trying to like, you know, put out fire. Bro, you need to be fine. If you didn't do it, you should be looking for who killed your wife. Period. This stuff happened over 20 some years ago. You're asking people on your set, you know, are you going to follow them? They were probably like one or two. Am I correct? Like, they don't really feel that vibe that was happening when it happened. Don't follow that idiot.
I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. I don't care what he has to say about fantasy league. Yeah.
It's old news, man. This is old news. He's like that dude that stays down the street. We already know what he's about. Stay away from that house. You know what I mean? Like, keep it pushing. Thanks, Jack.
I appreciate that. He's like the guy that stays down the street. Stay away from that house. He was acquitted on charges that he murdered Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman, although we know. And you know what happened. What OJ, he launched the Twitter account on the anniversary of the Bronco chase. You know what I mean? Jeez. You know what I mean?
So Adriana is right then. It's all about publicity, man.
Yeah. I was just going to say that day, the Bronco chase day, is the day my parents found out what gender I was. I was not even born yet.
So, like, we can look at you and be like, that's what's happened since the Bronco chase. You. You have been invented since then. He also, so you don't have to follow him, I'll give you this. He gave some fantasy football advice and also talked about trying to learn how to use Twitter. I want to play this. This is just 27 seconds of OJ talking about Twitter.
Hey, Twitter world. You know, for years, people have been able to say whatever they wanted to say about me with no accountability. But now I get to challenge a lot of that BS and set the record straight. More importantly, I'll be able to talk about everything, especially sports, fantasy football, and even politics. But for now, let me just say, to my fellow fathers out there, happy Father's Day, and God bless.
Yeah, I don't need a Father's Day wish from OJ. That wasn't on my list of things that I'm looking for on Father's
Definitely
Day.
Don't need his political views either. That's the last thing we want.
And by the way, he says people for years have been able to say what they wanted to say with no accountability. What he means is I haven't had a chance to fire back. It's not that they're not accountable. If people are saying something about you, OJ, that's not true, go to court. Sue them. Like, you know, he's not saying, like, their accountability exists. What he's saying is, I haven't had a chance to swing back. And I think that's what he's going to use this for. Josh is in Eugene. We have a line open at 503-417-7575. Go ahead, Josh.
Hey, well, yeah, you had the Father's Day message from OJ and the one from Bill Cosby on the same day. It was a bad day for social media, I'll tell you. I've got to tell you, I followed OJ for half a day, and then I felt dirty about it and followed him. Because somebody had posted their retweeted the original tweet where he talked about he had some getting even to do. And in my brain, I thought, oh, this is going to be good. It's going to be comical. So I followed it just to see some of the ridiculous stuff. But then I don't know, the more I sat on having followed him for a minute, I just felt bad about it. I unfollowed him again.
Let me ask you.
It's kind of like a train wreck.
Let me ask you, because I wrestled with it too, and I thought, do I have an obligation as a media member to follow him? Do you think I should follow him?
You know what? I mean, if you're into, like, the tabloids, I guess. There's nothing that he's going to say that's going to be honest or truthful. It's ridiculous. It's almost like if LeVar Ball murdered somebody and then you followed him. It's just ridiculous nonsense, I mean, that he's spewing. So, I mean, it's kind of like a train wreck, though. It's kind of hard to look away. But I don't really think that a media member needs to follow him.
I love, too, that he is now coming out with fantasy football advice. Here was the most recent post. He apparently took offense. This is the kind of crap you're going to get. He took offense with somebody named Pardo, who was talking about him to the media.
Hello, Twitter world. This is yours truly. You know, this is my first venture into the social media world, and it's amazing, you know, especially how quickly they can put up counterfeit sites. Anyway, we'll deal with that. My life has always been involved in the sports world, and I suspect as the weeks go on, that's pretty much what we'll be talking about. But once in a while, I'm going to go off topic and talk about something else, and this is one of those times. You know, Bob Kardashian, he's like a brother to me. He's a great guy. He met and married Chris, and they really had a terrific time together when they were together. Unfortunately, that ended. But never, and I want to stress, never in any way, shape, or form had I ever had any interest in Chris romantically or sexually, and I never got any indication that she had any interest in me. So all of these stories are just bogus, bad, you know, tasteless. Chloe, like all the girls I'm very proud of, just like I know Bob would be if he was here. But the simple facts of the matter is she's not mine. Now, one of the people who's spreading this rumor is a guy that the media loves to say is my manager. I had one manager in my whole life, Chuck Barnes, when I came out of USC for 3 years. Unfortunately, he died about 45 years ago. But even before he died, I opened my own office with the help of Skip Taft, my lawyer, my two assistants, Marilyn O'Brien, the late Marilyn O'Brien, and Kathy Randa. And I've always managed my own affairs, and I like to think very successfully. So when you see these guys like Norm and these guys claim that they're my manager, it's just not true. I may have done a deal here or there with them, but none of these guys have ever was anything remotely like a manager for me. In any event, that's it for today. Happy Father's Day. Take care.
Didn't he already give me a Happy Father's Day earlier? Now I'm getting another one. I just find that fascinating, that whole Kardashian world in him. And I love that. The beauty of the of Twitter is that I can get on and I can hear what he has to say without giving him like the gratuitous follow that he is craving.
Anything that comes that's important that comes from that account, you'll see. It'll get retweeted by your followers.
What'd you think about him saying Chloe's not his?
Well, I've heard those rumors before. I don't know. Everything he says, I don't care. that's just my opinion.
Happy Father's Day, he says. Your phone calls on OJ, 503-417-7575. Sam's in Portland. Sam, go ahead.
Yeah, John, you could go your entire career and never mention his name again, and I would love you and still follow you. I don't think you should follow him, but if you feel that the need to talk about him or to follow him, every time that need or that, you know, comes up, why don't you talk about domestic violence and how it's related to sports and the number of athletes that commit domestic violence and the need for better rules. Make it something positive rather than give this guy one more second of any of our time. Talk about those that need help and the issue that really is at the forefront of this evil human being. That's my
I think that's important to note. I also think the replies that he's getting are priceless. Like Nathan, who replied to him after he said Patrick Mahomes is the clear number one player in fantasy football. Peyton replied, and Nathan replied. First of all, Peyton said, Mahomes is a real killer out there. I agree. Nathan said, killer predictions, OJ. He joined Twitter on Sunday. He announced the presence by posting that grinning video, which is smarmy. He's got more than 700,000 followers now. My opinion, don't follow him. Don't give him what he wants. Yeah, he never should get that. We'll talk Bull Bull coming up. What would you do if you had a pick and Bull Bull was still out there? If you're an NBA GM, do you take a flyer on a guy that feels like a risk? Leave it here. Went to the file cabinet at my house, and I pulled out a folder that's probably an inch and a half thick today. It is the background check that the Trailblazers initiated on Zachary Randolph back in 2001 as they were preparing for the 2001 NBA draft. They held the 18th pick, and they were looking at Z-Bo. He was a guy who, like Bull Bull, had 1 year of college and didn't start for his Michigan State team. Tom Izzo brought him off the bench intentionally so. Had some maturity issues, some questions about character in his background, and the Blazers, like a lot of NBA teams, did their diligence. After all, a first-round pick is a three-year guaranteed contract. It's a big investment for a team. It's 7% of your roster. However you want to look at that, it's a significant deal. Josiah, you're in the air traffic control room today. Peter Sampson out today. Bobby Bean off doing whatever Bobby does. Josiah, I gave you during one of the breaks that folder. Did you flip through it at all? You take a look at it?
Yeah, it's wild, man. It looks like a court document almost.
Yeah.
And it's just, I have a question. Is it this thick for every player, or is it just because it's Z-Bo?
I don't know. I don't know, but the fact that he had a gun possession charge when he was a juvenile.
Yeah.
He had a Walmart incident they found where he shoplifted a pair of slacks that were worth $13.86. I don't know why that sticks with me. And his mom had to come down to the police station, May, and sign that thing. And there's interviews with his principal. The two interviews that really stuck with me were with the prosecutor on the gun charge, who said that he believed that with good structures, Zach Randolph would be a positive member of a team. And the principal. The principal had suspended him for the gun charge and said that when he suspended Zeebo from school, from high school, he broke into tears and started crying. And then when he came back from the suspension, he worked really hard. It's towards the end of the report, and it's really interesting reading. And I thought it was kind of, it gave you the lengths to which the Blazers went when they were investigating this pick. And by the way, two former FBI agents are the ones who are doing the investigating, so it's pretty thorough.
Yeah, they have names of his friends that could possibly be bad people around him that are possible drug dealers. They did not miss anything on this report.
And as it turns out, like his dad was incarcerated when he was drafted. His uncle was incarcerated. His brother was incarcerated. Zach Randolph's family support system, his immediate family support system, was a mess. And I feel like as I read the report, I got a really accurate picture. Like, they did a good job with this report because it shows that he was immature, that he was a bit of a follower, that if he didn't have good structure around him, he was going to be in trouble, that there was a propensity for the people around him to be involved with guns or drugs. And those were the things that eventually happened. Like, it happened. Racing down Broadway, he had a weapon in his car that he did not have a permit for, and he got into an interaction with police on that. His neighbors in the neighborhood he lived with had problems with him. He was, his friends were shooting off guns. And I always felt like Zeebo, I got along with him. He had good nature. He was always likable. I felt like he just wanted everyone around him to be happy. And eventually, I think he played his best basketball when he had his wife and his kids in Memphis with none of the Hoops family around him. I think he settled down. He made an all-NBA team. That's where he was not in trouble. But that report gives you an idea at to what lengths NBA teams will go to in trying to determine if a player should be drafted. I mentioned earlier in the show, I got three NBA teams that reached out to me, all picking between about number 9 and number 23 in the draft. Three teams independently reached out to me and said, in various ways, what do you think of Bull? And by the time they get to me, they've already talked to his high school teachers, and this became a problem because Bol Bol went to three different high schools. So none of the high school teachers really know him. And that is a problem for him when it comes to the draft because there's nobody, I'm guessing, in his NBA pre-draft report, the investigation, here's his character on paper. There's nobody in there vouching for him from an educational standpoint. There's not a teacher who goes, I had him for 3 years. He was a great kid. I saw him mature. Nobody saw him for 3 years. They saw him for a semester. We saw him for 9 games. That's a problem for Bull, and it's part of why I think he's a big question mark. I think that's part of the question. I'm not saying it's good or bad. He's just a question. Because NBA teams that are looking to invest in Bull Bull are going, is he worth the risk? Because it is a risk. They're all risks. Every single draft pick's a risk. Those are valuable assets. Every one of them's a risk. So all these teams are going, gosh, is he worth the risk? Like, can we afford to do that? And I think, as I looked at it, I didn't say to the NBA executives that are asking me I would pick him or not pick him. I don't feel qualified to say, hey, he's a great fit. I just said this. I said, I see what everybody else sees. He's 7'2". He's incredibly long. He's got good ball handling skills for a big. He is defensively lost, didn't understand pick and roll defense. I think it frustrated a lot of his teammates. It was visibly frustrating to watch. Oregon had to change the way it played when he was on the court. The Ducks played their best basketball without him. Like, I think Lewis King is less of a risk than Bol Bol because I saw Oregon play with Lewis King. Like, their best basketball happened with Lewis King on the floor. So I could say, yeah, he could be a part of something that is great. But with Bol, it's purely like he's a really good shooter for a big. He's 7'2". He's incredibly long in a league that values length. Yeah, would you take a flyer on him? And I said that to one of the GMs. I said, yeah, you would take a flyer on him with where you're picking. And he said, no. We're not in the flyer business. It's about taking good players. And the GM said back to me, the NBA is a league, and I'm paraphrasing, that gives players reasons to quit every day. Think about this. Real life is hard. I have never really thought about this in the context of quitting or succeeding. But maybe if you're somebody out there who has struggled, who has to overcome things, whether it be a financial struggle or a health struggle or a life struggle or just, you know, hey, sometimes life is hard. Life gives you reasons to quit. And I think people often that are successful in life are people who bulldoze through it, who fail and fail and fail, but get back up and keep trying and keep forcing and try something else and this and that and go to school and better yourself. And every day you wake up, right, trying to climb and crawl and fight. The NBA gives players reasons to quit every day. That stuck with me. And you think about it, it is guaranteed contracts breeds apathy. That's a reason to quit. Come on, man, you're going to get paid anyway. Also, the grind of the schedule. It's summer league, it's training camp, it's 82 games, it's the playoffs. It is a long grind. How about health? You get reasons to quit. You're tired. Nobody's talking about load maintenance when you're a rookie. They're just out there saying, you need to better prove yourself, better prove yourself, better prove yourself. And by the way, the challengers never stop coming. They're always telling you, quit, man, quit. There's another guy coming for your job. You can quit. You can quit. You got millions of dollars. You can quit. You can quit. The league gives you reasons to quit, so many reasons to quit. And I think there is a huge question mark in Bol's camp. And the question is this. Will the guy fight? Does he know how to fight? Will he fight? Does he have the metal? I want to put it to you, the listener. You're picking. In this NBA draft, you got a first round pick, you're an NBA general manager. Is Bol Bol on your short list of players to take? I'm not talking about a top three pick or a top five pick, but you're picking. Say you're picking at 10, you're picking at 12, you're picking at 15, you're picking at 17, 19, 21, 22. Do you take Bol? At what point does he become attractive to you? 503-417-7575. I'll give you my answer to that question. I want yours.
NBA draft, the Portland Trailblazers select Greg Oden from Ohio State University.
That's how it went. 07 Blazers picked Oden. I want you to tell me what you do with Bol Bol. What do you do with a 7'2" guy that can shoot the three but is frail? Has a long wingspan, which NBA teams would love, but also not a great defender, can handle the ball a little bit, but gosh, he looks disinterested a lot of the time when he was playing. When he looked locked in, he looked like a top five pick. What do you do with Bol Bol if you're an NBA team? I'm fascinated by this, and I think he is the player I'm most interested in. He will be in the green room at the Barclays Center for the draft, but how long will he sit there? 503-417-7575, tell me what you'd do. I wouldn't touch him. And it, in part, I'm burned by what I just played. The Greg Oden draft replay, which I don't like playing, but I play it because it's a part of the history of the state, and you've got to, if you are a Blazer fan, deal with your history if you're going to avoid repeating it. I don't think Bol will be on the block when the Blazers pick, But I am reminded, as I hear Bull talk, of what Greg Oden sounded like.
I wanted to be a dentist when I was younger, but then I started to get big, and I kind of realized my hands were so big, it kind of scared the little kids away. I put my hands in their mouth. So, you know, I just realized that basketball, going to the NBA, is a possibility, and that's something I want to use to better my family.
If I'm an NBA team, I'm worried about the fragility of Bol Bol. I am. He needs to put on weight. He's not strong enough to compete. I think he's a project for an NBA team. I'm also intrigued by his length and his ability to shoot the three and the fact that he could be a shot blocker. I mean, he's freaky long. But what do you do? I wouldn't touch him. I wouldn't pick him. I don't like the questions that I was getting from those three NBA teams were all about his work ethic and his focus and his heart. And I got to be honest. I was honest with them. I said, I don't know the guy that well. He was there for 9 games. They barely let him speak to the media. He seemed disinterested when he was there. It was a little bit of a sideshow. And look, if I'm betting on who's going to be in the league longer, I'm looking at Lewis King and I'm going, I would bet Lewis King will be in the league long after Bol Bol is done. 503-417-7575. Adriana, Josiah, are you picking Bol Bol or no?
No, I feel like Bol Bol is super accident and injury prone. He's so thin that I just feel like he needs a little bit more time to build onto his body. He has the length, but he needs that muscular structure in order for him to be like stable, I feel like. It's just too much of a risk.
Josiah, agree or disagree?
I'm taking him, but not late first round or in the second round. I'm not taking him with a lottery pick. I just think, I know we throw this word around a lot, but the potential there is so big with him, and he's perfect for today's NBA. If he does indeed build up that work ethic and get stronger, he is absolutely perfect for today's NBA with his ball handling skills, the way he can shoot it. I take him in the late first round, second round, but I don't take him in the lottery if I have that pick.
I'm looking, and the teams I was talking to are picking between 9 and 22. And so those three general managers are basically asking, and they're not asking me for basketball evaluations. They know what kind of player he is. They know his body. They get the medical reports. They're just asking me, like, what do you think of him? What was said about him? How did he react? And I said, look, they didn't even let him talk to the media. And in the NCAA tournament, he was around the team, and they sequestered him like he was on like this jury that he couldn't be speaking to anybody. And the thing that got me is I never saw him look joyful. Can you remember a picture or an image of Bull where he looked joyful?
The one thing for me as a Duck fan that kind of worried me when he did commit is the first thing he said when he committed, why he committed, was because of the shoes. It didn't seem like he cared about any of the basketball stuff. Going on your point is that he's kind of just playing because he's good at it and all of the free benefits that come with it. True love for the game, you know?
And if he comes out and says, I wanted to be a dentist at one point, I will say run away. I want to know if listeners would draft Bol Bol. Where do you stand on that question? 503-417-7575. I did throw out kind of the same logic that Josiah threw out to that one GM, and I said, look, you're picking, you know, what's the risk there? And He kind of came back. He said, look at the Raptors. Look at what the Raptors have done without a lottery pick. Look at the players like Draymond Green that can get picked later in the draft, first round, second round, that end up being really good players. You don't want to just waste a pick on a guy you don't think can play. And to your point, Adriana, he's so skinny. He looks like he has to run around in the shower to get wet. Like, I mean, he can't, like, if he's standing still, the water's going to miss him.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't see that body holding up I'm thinking about the centers. Like, yeah, he can shoot it, but who's he defending? And, you know, he's going to have to defend like a three. What position is he playing?
That's another thing. He's not, I don't think his feet are quick enough.
Yeah.
And did he get injured in high school at all? Did he have injury problems?
He's been hurt all along. It's been feet and big guys. It happens with big guys
all the time.
But, you know, I hope I'm wrong. Like, I hope he develops into this great player. He has this long career. He's happy and all these things. I'm not, wishing ill will on him. I'm just looking at the NBA game and I'm going, like, where? And what is the, you know, maybe Chris Boucher is a reasonable comparison to him. But Boucher goes to the D-League and becomes the MVP of the D-League. And by the way, I kind of like Boucher's game, all-around game, a little more. A little more developed, a little more mature. Certainly doesn't have the length, doesn't have the pedigree that Bol comes with. But he, you know, Ball would be a shot blocker. He'd have length. Let's put that in the win column. He can shoot the three. That's today's NBA. He's a big guy. For a big guy, he's got a decent handle, although he did lose the ball a lot, and I think he over a little overconfident in it. But I look at Lewis King. Am I wrong to think Lewis King might have the better NBA career?
I'd take him over Bol Bol if I was in the lottery, definitely after what I saw. He basically, him and Peyton led them to the Sweet 16. It was Lewis King being the best player, the best scorer, yeah, at least. He could create out of nothing.
And I think by the time they get to me, they're just looking for, have we got something wrong? Hey, we got one more phone call to make. Like it was a 10 o'clock phone call that I got, the last call that I got 2 nights ago. It's like 10 o'clock at night, and I'm way down the list, right? They've talked to the teachers already, and I was fascinated by that point because I can sit back and go, I don't like the fact that these guys go to three different high schools. I don't like it. Some of them four, but the fact that Bol had jumped around and jumped around and jumped around, I never thought about this being the negative. I never thought about the idea that nobody really knows him. You know, like I know that early in my newspaper career, I moved jobs every 2 years. It was like 10 years into the career, I'd been at like five different places. And I knew that it was really difficult to develop, even in a 2 year window, personal relationships that with people that I would truly call friends. So you arrive like 10 years later and you're like, you know, I've kind of missed out on 10 years of truly developing friendships because you have all these sort of surface level friendships with people you're working with and interacting with. And then you're leaving. You're moving to a different part of the country. He did that in high school when you're supposed to be developing, like, you know, if I go back, Josiah, and I ask your high school teachers, what is Josiah all about? I'm going to find a teacher that goes, you know, he was a great kid. I had him in two different classes. I knew his older sibling. And, you know, it, and Adrian, I'm going to find the same thing in Birmingham, I hope. What are they going to say about you?
They're going to say that I was always on. I was just on top of it. Good grades. Really, yeah, nice.
See, you're going to have people who remember you. They remember Bol Bol because he's 7'2". And in fact, one of the GMs said that because Findlay Prep is one of the places he went. A lot of NBA players have gone through there. They all had nice things to say about the other NBA players, but none of the teachers really thought Bol cared about being in their classroom, and that hurt him. Leave it here.
John Canzano. Raw. Sourced. Fresh. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, built by High Caliber Millwrights. This is the bald-faced truth.
I don't know if you've ever been in the sewer, but a story on Oregon Live caught my eye just a few minutes ago. I think it would be very unusual for people to go into the sewer, but apparently two surveillance videos from Northwest Front Avenue, a business on Northwest Front Avenue, Chown Hardware, long-time, 130-year family-owned business, surveillance video. The manager found a shoe on the ground. And the manager was very curious how the shoe got on the ground on the pavement in front of the store. So went back and looked at surveillance video. He watched the video, and what he saw blew his mind. He saw three people climb out of the sewer through a manhole cover late Thursday, then changed their clothes. One of them tossed a pair of shoes in the air. So he went back and found a video from June 2nd where five people climbed out of the sewer. Now, I don't know how many people would want to go down a sewer manhole. It doesn't feel a safe or sanitary place to be. And by the way, city officials say that when people need to go into the sewer, they send sensors in first to determine the oxygen level because you don't even know if there's oxygen, enough oxygen in the sewer. So, basically they send them down with a supply of fresh air if there's not enough oxygen. But apparently, is anybody living in the sewers? Is that the problem? Do we have proof that people are living in there? Or are they just fooling around going down into the sewer? Now, the Portland police are investigating. They sent... How'd you like to get that call? You're a police officer? Hey, we need you to... I picture the morning meeting there. You know, they talk some sports. They talk about what's going on. They've got their normal police business that's serious stuff. You know, maybe there's some handouts. Maybe there's some technology updates. Body cam updates. But apparently, now they call Officer Adriana. We're going to need you to go down to Front Avenue and check out the sewer situation there. There may be some people living in there.
This sounds like some Ninja Turtles type of stuff that I want nothing to do with.
My initial reaction was Stephen King's It.
That too.
So it's gonna be a no for me.
That too.
I quit.
These are not homeless people, guys. I've seen the video. It's weird. They're exploring. It looks like they're exploring. It looks like they're fooling around. Looks like somebody went, you know what? What's going on down there?
Well, you know, have you heard that there's like tunnels under the city?
Yes.
Maybe they're doing something with that. I don't know, but I just would never.
That's a no for me, man.
It's a no. A no for me as well, so I'm going to stay out of the sewers. Another story that may fly in conjunction with this is the National Low Income Housing Coalition puts a report out every year, and the report just came out. And according to the report, in order to rent in Portland, and to comfortably afford a typical apartment, you have to earn $39,252 a year to afford a typical one-bedroom apartment without spending more than 30% of your income on rent. Now, that 30% number is an important number. I grew up in, I talk about my dad often on the show. My dad was in professional baseball, and then after that, he got into housing. He always used that 30% number. You want your gross income, you want to put 30% of that as a typical number for housing. If you can keep your housing cost under 30% of your gross income, you will be able to live comfortably. That is, and in that number over time has held up. Now, if you're a minimum wage worker making $11.25 an hour, you got to work 60 hours a week in order to make rent on that apartment. And the National Housing Coalition has put this report out, shows you how people in Oregon versus, in Multnomah County versus maybe Benton County or Hood River County, how it matches up in all the counties. It ain't good. It ain't good for the, across the country, by the way. You're making it in other counties better than you're making it in Multnomah County, but, I am concerned about the cost of housing and homelessness and the stress that it puts on American people, like young people especially. There's people who are leaving college, have to be incredibly stressed out by the accumulation of debt that they have in just affording college. And, and then, by the way, go get a job. And there's some pressure on you to get a job because if you don't get a job fast, that starts to your credit card bills start to stack up, or maybe you're living in a situation, maybe you're living in a manhole cover underneath the city. I don't know.
Maybe that's why they're down.
Do you
there.
Feel that pressure as
Heck
a young person?
Yeah, I feel that pressure all the time. You have 6 months after you're out of school to start paying back your student loans. 6 months plus finding a place to live.
That's hanging overhead.
Yeah, always.
Yeah, the living situation sucks.
Yeah, Josiah, you're a young guy.
I still live with my mom, so yeah. I pay rent there.
Did I ever tell you? Do you know the story of the guy who lived here on the sixth floor?
No, I think Judah told me about that.
He was a host. In fact, he hosted in this time slot years. I was in afternoon drive, and he was in middays, and I would come in, and sometimes in the morning he had bedhead. It's the best way to put it. You know, is that a thing, bedhead? You understand what I mean by that?
Yeah.
So, he had bedhead, and he would be walking around here like with a cup of coffee. And he would, it was almost like he wasn't in like a robe or slippers, but it was unusual. And then he would say things like, I'm still looking for a place to live, because he'd moved here from out of the area. And I think what he decided ultimately was that he needed to live here because it was cheaper than actually paying rent. Because they have a shower here. You know they have a shower. You got a full kitchen. There was couches. So apparently some of the people who were coming in the morning eventually discovered him at like 5 in the morning in some of the offices. He was just asleep.
Under the desk, right? So yeah. He couldn't be caught.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Like, can you imagine? You're coming in, you open your office door, there he is, like curled up with a pillow, napping. And it's kind of sad, and because they told him, you're going to have to get a place to live. I would have just rolled with it. Like, you know what? To each his own.
Yeah, nobody's here after, like, yeah. 7.
I mean, he might creep out some of the janitors that are here.
Have you ever spent a night in this building?
I would. I almost did one time for, like, a promotion shift, but we were kind of told that we could do that, so.
Yeah, what time in the morning do you have to get here for a promotion shift?
Well, that's back when we were covering the Ducks games. We had to be at our meeting spot at 2:30 in the morning.
Oh, yeah, you might as well spend the night.
Right.
The closest I came, I guess I did the, I board up the opening Seattle Mariners games here in Japan.
Yeah.
So I was here like at 12 a.m. through 7 a.m., but I was working. So
yeah. Do you ever tempted to just take a nap during the baseball game, or do you have to do something?
You could.
Can we talk about this on air?
You don't have to press a button until the end of every inning. So
you can take 20-minute naps.
Yeah, doze off for 10
just
minutes.
Just set a timer.
Because if you're here at midnight, 12:30 in the morning.
Yeah. Plus, I'm not a big baseball guy either, so
yeah,
it's tough.
You're there the whole time, and then you suddenly doze off. What would happen? Would it be dead air?
Yeah, because that's the problem with the Mariners pot. Yeah, they just have dead air during our local breaks.
So you would literally be, it would be so quiet, you would not wake up.
Mm-mm.
You could sleep through the whole game. Can you imagine?
I don't think Judah would be very happy with it.
Be your last game. You know, but
don't put me on them anymore.
He'd be like, man, he just dozed off during a shift. That's another story that caught my eye. I think, it's not in my 2 at 2, which I'm going to do here. But those are two stories that I think are top of mind. And I know a lot of kids who are trying to get to college are trying to figure out 2-year or 4-year. Now, I went to community college out of high school. I regret it. I don't regret it for the reasons, though, that some people might think. I was admitted to a few 4-year schools. I just couldn't decide, and I didn't know what I wanted to do. And ultimately, the fallback position became, let's just go to community college, and then you'll figure it out in a semester or two or 2 years or whatever. And I did that, and I eventually went on to a 4-year school. But I felt like when I transferred to the 4-year school, I had missed out. I had missed out on sort of the social interaction of being a freshman in the dorms. I didn't get that experience. Were you a freshman in the dorms?
Yes, I was.
Both of you?
Yep, I was.
What was that like?
I loved my, I had a great experience. I had the best, I did random roommate. I got one of my best friends to this day. She's amazing. And we went to like some frat parties and did all that, but it wasn't at my school. I went to UAB,
yeah.
And it wasn't a big party school at all, but we had our fun times. I really enjoyed my first year on campus.
I kind of made a mistake because I grew up here in Portland. I went to Milwaukee High School, and I ended up going to Portland State my freshman year.
Yeah.
When I should have just went to U of O to begin with.
Right away.
That's what I did after that. But I lived in the dorms here. I didn't get along with my roommates. Didn't really make that many friends. It just
kind of like an Adriana situation.
Yeah, it didn't
currently.
Really feel like nothing wrong with Portland State, but
let's just talk about it.
No.
Let's flesh it out into the open.
Well, I mean, I've just continuously had roommate problems this whole year.
Yeah,
oh, no, that's,
and it is what it is, you know.
Is it though? Like if I don't want to be an RA, but if I could just drop in for like an hour, I feel like I could solve all these problems. Like, here's what I'd say to people. Tell me if I solve all your roommate problems. I know nothing about the actual problems, but here I would say this. Clean up after yourselves. Everybody clean up after yourselves. Nobody's here to be your maid. That would be rule number one. Rule number two would be, if you're going to bring a visitor here, make sure it's somebody that's not annoying the other people who are living in this space. And by the way, they don't live here. So they can, you know, get the hell out. You're not paying rent. You can visit, but you don't live here. And if anybody starts to go, does he live here or does she live here? They've been here too long. Those two problems, does it solve everything?
You can talk until your face turns blue, but yeah. That doesn't mean they're going to do it.
Like, I'm a really clean guy, and my roommate my freshman year.
Dirty.
Yeah, it was not a good match. And he was really... He was a really artsy guy,
yeah.
And so he would get mad when I would watch sports on TV and like just yell for my
team. Wait a
minute,
he was artsy but messy?
Yeah.
And you were the sports guy, but clean?
Yeah, I know,
it's
right?
It's like Odd Couple.
It did not work out, that's for sure. So I'm glad I went to U of O, though. Made some great friends down there, and I should have just done it.
So if I were coming out of a high school right now in the Portland metropolitan area, would you guys advise me, I could probably afford to go to a four-year. I might have to take some loans out here or there, but my grades are good enough. I might get some help. Would I be going to a four-year school, or would you still say, go to a community college and save the money and join it in progress?
It depends on where you think you're at. Like your exactly. experience, if you're ready and know what you want to do, have a really strong, confident idea of that, go ahead and go to the four-year institution and do what you need to do. If you don't want to waste your time and your money, get your prereqs done at community college. It saves you so much money. And, I mean, you do miss out on a little bit of the experience, but I think in the long run, it would be beneficial to you if you don't know what you want to do.
If you yeah. don't know.
It just depends on the person.
I think it's such really. An interesting time. And I'm not telling anybody what to do with your life. I think every student's got to make that mind up, and every family's got to make it mind up for themselves. But I often held up the idea that I attended a community college as evidence to other people who are going to community college, like, remove the stigma. Look, it worked out okay for me. All right. You know, I'm employed. I've got to where I needed to be in my profession. To me, this was making it right. Cause I often were alongside other kids in community college that I don't know if they're still there. They might still be going to school there. Like, they never left my hometown. That's what I worried about, like getting stuck.
Yeah,
that's a very big thing.
Yeah, I've done
that a thing.
I yeah. did like one or two terms at community college, and I definitely saw a lot of that. Yeah.
And you never want to, this is kind of my rules to my younger siblings, so you never want to take a break. Because if you take a break, I don't think you'll ever go back.
Yeah, that's a stay in it, right? Did you take a break? You took a little break.
Okay, well,
you took
I did a break. To get residency, though. Okay. It was different.
Okay.
So and by the way, Anna and I were just on her ass about getting, it was exactly what you were saying. You need to get back in it. You need to go for it. You need to fulfill your dreams.
I had a support system, that's for sure. Yeah. Getting through that.
I don't know
but
if
yeah.
it's support, but it was, we were barking at her.
Nagging at her.
Yeah. All right. Leave it right here. 2 at 2 is coming up. Plus a great interview with a guy who's running a website that will help simplify the NBA salary cap and all those complicated problems that come along with it. A State of the Union on the Trailblazers roster, the summer options for the Trailblazer, and why Damian Lillard's Supermax is a better option sooner rather than later. All of that, part of the discussion I'll have with Jeff Siegel of EarlyBirdRights.com. It's a website he has founded that deals with sort of the complicating factors of the Blazers roster. Will Al-Farouq Aminu be with the Blazers? All of that stuff. We're going to do the 2 at 2 right here. It's the two biggest stories in sports. We do it every day.
The 2 at 2.
Some traction with the NBA draft. The Knicks have apparently been offered a trade for the number 3 overall pick. They've passed on that, intending to stay there. That's not a surprise. A lot of NBA people think that there are 3 players in this draft, and after number 3, it's a crapshoot. It's going to be interesting to see what happens on Thursday. I think, clearly, I've spent some time today talking about Bol Bol and whether or not you can get players after number 3, and what are you doing, and what is the speculation, what is the upside, clearly, of taking a player at 4, 5, 6, 7 that is a question mark. If you are somebody who follows the NBA landscape, you'll want to be tuned in on Thursday. We'll do some stuff on Thursday's show, not mock drafts, real draft stuff on Thursday as we talk about who will be the biggest steal. And if you're going to redraft the 2019 NBA draft 3 or 4 years from now, you know, you're going to redraft it differently. That's done all the time. If you're going to redraft Draymond Green's draft, he's not picked late in that draft. He is a lottery pick, a high pick in that draft. That's number one of our two at two. Also, apparently, Major League Baseball umpires are speaking out about a suspension that they're calling a slap in the face. Major League Baseball's Umpires Association has called the suspension that Manny Machado was given for making contact with an umpire a slap in the face. He was suspended one game after arguing a called third strike during San Diego's game against the Rockies on Saturday. He got one game, one single game. According to the Post, quote, what kind of precedent is that setting? It's not okay to throw a temper tantrum and physically touch an umpire just because you don't agree. Violence in the workplace? Does this count as violence in the workplace when it comes to an umpire? Well, Major League Baseball said the punishment was for aggressively arguing and making contact with an umpire. Machado, by the way, says he did not make contact with the umpire. He is appealing the suspension. He said, quote, we have our case and we're going to wait to see what appeal comes back with. The Major League Baseball Umpires Association called the suspension a disgrace. It said any physical contact should not be tolerated. Machado, by the way, the more disgraceful thing is he's hitting 264 after signing the $300 million 10-year contract in the spring. That's our two at two. Two biggest things going on in sports. NBA draft related, I'm always curious to see what happens. The draft to me is always exciting. On Thursday's show, we'll deal more with that. And of course, on Friday, out in the wake of that, we also have a comedian on Friday's show, which will be really cool. But I'm into the NBA draft. I want to see what the Blazers are going to do because I think the draft is one of the key areas where the Blazers can try to get better immediately. Of course, we'll talk more about that with Jeff Siegel of Early Bird Rights, who's coming up. The Blazers are a little hamstrung. Same position they were in last summer. They can go above the cap to sign their expiring free agents, the five free agents who are expiring. But will they? Will owner Jody Allen be as willing to pay as her brother was for guys that seemingly may not help the Blazers reach a championship? Are you going to be a taxpayer? And by the way, in 2021... if they continue to pay tax, they will get the super tax, which will really cost them. So at some point, the Blazers are going to have to look to play ball, or are they just going to say, look, we're going to pay a huge number? I remember when Bob Whitsitt left the Blazers organization in 2003, one of the things that Steve Patterson, the incoming president, was bellyaching about was nobody in the organization knew that the Blazers had this, at the time, $20 million luxury tax that they were going to get slapped with in the 2003-04 season. And Steve Patterson had to deliver that news to Paul Allen, who didn't know he had a $20 million bill coming for his NBA team that, by the way, was not very good. So I wouldn't want to be... And you talk about all the people that got laid off in that era by the Blazers organization. I think it was in part because, A, they were paying Sean Kemp $20 million, who wasn't even on the team at the time. He was the highest paid player on the roster for like a couple of years. When you go back and look at the salary sheets that were put out, the Blazers were paying this exorbitant salary to a player who was not contributing. And then further, they had the luxury tax. They were a taxpayer because of that. And they weren't good. They were in transition going to this good guy model that they eventually found. And it wasn't a clean transition for the organization. It was really, really troubling time. The second thing in a 2-at-2, you can't make contact with an umpire. And if you're Major League Baseball, you got a fine line to walk. So you're Joe Torre. You got a fine line to walk. You have to impose a penalty on Machado. You have to know he's going to appeal it. So I think they were trying to give Machado a penalty that he would accept. But the fact is, he got called out on strikes. He didn't like it. He argued, he made contact, he got a game. This isn't Roberto Alomar spitting. It's just not. But a one-game ban or a one-game suspension, a bit of slap in the face, yes, I agree with that. I think if you touch an umpire, if it can be proven that you touched an umpire, one game is not nearly enough. All right, coming up, we're going to talk to Jeff Siegel of Early Bird Rights. He's going to do something that not a lot of people do. He's not only going to point out the problems and the challenges that the Blazers have this coming summer, he's going to offer you some solutions, which most people don't. Most people just point out, here's the problem, they don't have a player at this position, what are you going to do? He's actually going to come forth with some solutions. So stay tuned. Is Al-Farouq Aminu going to be on this roster? He's going to answer that and other things coming up. You got the bald-faced truth. Our next guest runs a website called earlybirdrights.com. Jeff Siegel is the founder of that website, and he's joining us now. Jeff, what was the genesis of earlybirdrights.com?
It was a place for me to write all of my various musings that don't belong anywhere else or that other editors don't want. So it's just my own little baby that I can write whatever I want. The biggest draw for Early Bird Rights is that I post all of my cap sheets up over there. So if you're interested in salary cap stuff, any of the 30 teams, I have all of that information available on the website. So that was sort of the genesis of it. Now it's sort of grown into somewhere that I can just write kind of whatever I want.
I know you've done some work for Blazers Edge. I know that you write for Forbes and some other places, so people will be familiar with your work, but I love it that you found your passion. I mean, and I think sometimes when you see, like, Henry Abbott, when he started off with True Hoop, it was so clear that this was something he was really passionate about, and you could tell, all right, this guy's going to make it.
Yeah, I mean, the salary cap stuff, I'm trained as an accountant and a mathematician at university, and so it just sort of came together really well for me, and the, you know, breaking down the legal aspects of how things work, you know, combined with the numbers, it just sort of jumped into my head and never left. And so now I built out this whole workbook where everything's automated and everything's, you know, very easy for me to update. And it's a lot of fun for me. I realize that it's not a lot of fun for everybody else, or, you know, it's very complicated, but, you know, it's really fun for me to try to figure out the puzzle of how teams put their teams together.
Let's talk about the Blazers, because you're doing this 30 teams in 30 days series where you're sort of rolling everybody out. I was really interested in the Blazers offseason preview. What jumps out to you about the Blazers situation?
I mean, it's very similar to last year in that they don't have a whole lot of money to spend, and they're going to have to sort of add at the edges and try to figure out how they can, you know, what their budget looks like long term, what their budget looks like for this upcoming year. The Damian Lillard extension obviously is a big deal. That doesn't affect their 2019-20 books, but that's, you know, another expense for ownership and, you know, where ownership is going, whether Jody Allen is going to keep the team or they're going to sell it, what her appetite is for the payroll budget. Is she going to allow them to, you know, really jump into the tax like they have over the last couple of years, or does she want to, you know, cut that back a little bit? All of that stuff sort of is going to really inform how much money they have to spend this summer.
When you look at the position they're in this summer, is there anything, if you're making a long-term bet, if you're a Blazers fan or you're a front office guy and you're looking at this summer in particular, is there anything the Blazers can do this summer that would help them be a player in free agency 2 years from now, 3 years from now, as Lillard gets that supermax? Or are they kind of painted into a corner? How do you see that?
They're a little bit painted into a corner. I mean, the Myers-Leonard, Maurice Harkless, and Evan Turner contracts will expire after this year. But even still, they're not looking at a ton of cap space next summer. If they do anything, you know, to keep some of the guys who are already on the roster or sign somebody over this offseason who, you know, cuts into future spending, that's going to curtail that as well. They've got their draft pick as well for $2.2 million in 2020, 2021. So, like, they're really not looking at a ton of space until 2021. But then that's when Damian Lillard's supermax contract kicks in. Obviously, they're going to have a lot more sort of spending between now and then just to fill out the roster as these guys come off the roster. You know, Yusuf Nurkic, you would think, based on his play last year, his guarantee will be picked up that year. So that'll cut out a little bit of their available room. They'll have draft picks between now and then as well. So it's hard to project too far out into the future, but that Lillard supermax extension that'll kick in 2021, that will cut out a lot of the sort of maximum cap space that they can possibly have in 21. So they're, I mean, they're not totally painted into a corner yet, especially because, you know, Turner, Leonard, and Harkless will come off the books next year, but they're not looking to add another, you know, max free agent anytime soon.
Jeff Siegel is with us. His website is called earlybirdrights.com. You should check it out. Al-Farouq Aminu, the team postures like they want him back. He's saying he wants to be back in Portland. What are the chances the Blazers re-sign him? What's that going to look like?
I mean, the biggest thing for them is whether, you know, whether ownership is willing to pay him. Like, that's it. They can go as high as they want to. They have full bird rights on him. They can give him the max if they want to. Obviously, they shouldn't do that. But, like, whatever negotiation happens, it's all about them versus how much they want to spend on him. And if he wants to be back and they want him back and they're willing to pay for it, then there's no – it's not like the Rodney Hood or Seth Curry situations or even Enes Kanter where they are restricted in how much they can – they're literally restricted in how much they can offer these guys. Aminu is – the sky's the limit. The max is the limit. They can pay him whatever he wants. It's just about how much is ownership willing to go into the tax to keep this team around.
We can all sit around and say, hey, there's something wrong here. Like, they don't have the talent. But I love on Early Bird Rights that you get into – some speculation about how some players might fit. You mentioned Marvin Williams. You say he'd be an interesting addition, especially if they're moving on from Aminu. What do you see there?
I mean, he's just sort of the offensive version of Al-Farouq Aminu. Aminu is a strong defender, but not an elite defender, and then sort of takes something off the table offensively. Marvin Williams is sort of the opposite of that. He is a strong shooter, but not like an elite shooter, and is a minus defensively, but not a huge minus, just like Aminu is not a huge minus offensively. It's sort of, he's sort of the opposite version in that way. He's a really good shooter. He's going to, you know, help space the floor for Lillard and McCollum offensively. Things will flow better offensively when he's out there with those guys, you know, but they, you know, trading for him is a little bit more difficult because they've got a match salary. You know, there would be some interesting machinations that would have to happen there, but he would be an interesting addition. You know, the fact that he's opted into his contract makes it a little bit more difficult to acquire him, but they could make a trade to make that happen. And I think he would be a good offensive fit, and the defensive stuff would have to, you know, they would have to make that up in some other way.
Eric Gordon and PJ Tucker in Houston, if they're really blowing that up, you wrote that the Blazers should be calling every 15 minutes to get a deal done. I love that.
I mean, they should be calling every 5 minutes. They should be calling every 30 seconds. Every time Morey hangs up the phone, they should call right back, because those guys would be so, so good for them. I mean, think about, PJ Tucker, if Al-Farouq Aminu is walking out the door, PJ Tucker is a much better version of Al-Farouq Aminu. He's a better defender. He's a better shooter. He's just everything that Al-Farouq Aminu is, but just better. And so, like, he would just seamlessly fit into this team. He's going to make less money than Aminu will next year with, you know, his contract's like $8 million or something. It's crazy the value that Tucker would bring to any team that's trying to win. If I were Houston, I would not be considering trading either one of those guys. But if things go wrong in Houston, as they sort of look like they might be, those guys would be, you know, particularly strong additions for Portland. You know, Eric Gordon can play the three, can play the two in certain situations. And so, you know, he's, you know, very strong, very burly, obviously a very good shooter, a high level defender, somebody who can get to the rim, another, you know, guy you can throw the ball and let him go to work. So, you know, he would be a very good addition next to Lillard and McCollum if they can make that work. So, I mean, if Houston is willing to sell on those guys, it's not just Portland, but Portland should be on the phone as often as they possibly can.
You also mentioned Serge Ibaka. If Kawhi Leonard goes to the Clippers, it looks like, you know, there'd be some change in Toronto. That's a guy who fits, you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think he would be somebody who could play the same sort of role that he played for Toronto this past season, where he was the starting center throughout the year, and then Marc Gasol came in and they'd sort of started to move toward Marc Gasol, and then Marc Gasol was the starter for the entire playoff run, and obviously they won the title, so that worked out really well. Jusuf Nurkic is sort of in that same situation. They're not going to trade for Jusuf Nurkic, but they're going to get him back later in the year as he recovers from his injury. If Nurkic is not 100% and is not sort of where we expect him to be coming off of this injury, then you have Serge Ibaka as a starting caliber center to sort of take over for Nurkic. I think that's their biggest hole, you know, going into next season. Kanter's a free agent. Zach Collins and Myers Leonard, don't inspire a ton of confidence as a full-time starting center. But then Nurkic, you know, obviously with the injury, who knows, you know, where he's going to be when he comes back. So, you know, that's where I sort of thought Ibaka would be a nice stopgap in that particular circumstance.
I'm wrestling with the Blazers season and what to make of it. Again, we're talking to Jeff Siegel, earlybirdrights.com. But, you know, I think it was a really fun season. It was fun to cover. I think fans got into it. I think it was much needed in Portland, as you know. But I also am wrestling with the fact that you had, you had the best teams on the other side of the bracket, and was it lined up for them? What should we make of this Blazers season? How far away are they from contending? How wide open is the West after the Davis trade, in your opinion?
I mean, I think the West is relatively wide open, especially because the Warriors are sort of, you would imagine they're going to take a step back with Thompson out until February or March, with Durant probably out the entire year, depending on whether even those guys come back or not. They don't have a lot of money to spend on other people. So you would imagine that Golden State, as sort of the Kings in the West, are going to take a little bit of a step back. You know, Portland didn't fare particularly well against Golden State, even without Durant. So, like, how much confidence do you have if you're Portland that you can run back the same team and be better than a Golden State team that you know, basically trounced you even without Durant in the Western Conference Finals? You know, that's an open question. Obviously, the Lakers are going to be there with LeBron and Anthony Davis. You know, the Clippers may be there with Kawhi Leonard and whoever else they can put around him. There are Denver, of course, is still going to be quite good. Oklahoma City, Utah, all of these teams who are sort of in the Blazers tier. Obviously, the Blazers were able to beat a couple of those teams in the playoffs. So, but all of those teams are sort of clumped together behind, you know, the Lakers, perhaps, depending on how well that team fits together and what kind of role players they can bring in. And then, of course, Golden State, who, when they get Thompson back, will be able to sort of gear up for a playoff run. During the regular season, that team might not be as good because they're going to need to rest their big guys and they won't have Thompson and Durant. But once Thompson is able to get back into the flow of things, he's, you know, they're going to be a very formidable playoff opponent. Portland's sort of in that mix. They're in the mix of the sort of 3 through 6 in the West. I don't know that they can look at what has happened so far this offseason since they were bounced out of the playoffs and say that they should make some sort of big trade to get back into things. If they can, that would be, that would be great if they can move Evan Turner and a couple of first round picks to get somebody who is, you know, going to, you know, be a high level, you know, player like CJ McCollum, basically, like on that same level where he's a, you know, top 30, top 20 kind of guy to pair with those guys. I mean, that would be ideal if they can find that guy available, but that's, you know, those players are few and far between.
The Anthony Davis trade, the Lakers get the short term, they get Davis, they pair him with LeBron, Pelicans just get a pile of players and those picks and look to be okay. Is this truly a win-win in your opinion when you see that, you evaluate that trade?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is. I think the Lakers got exactly what they wanted. They had to go for Anthony Davis this summer because, you know, you can't waste another year of LeBron's prime waiting for Davis to hit free agency. So they had that ticking time bomb of, they needed to get this deal done this summer. The earlier, the better for them for planning purposes. And then, you know, the Pelicans, of course, had the same sort of ticking time bomb of, you know, Davis is going to walk for nothing next year if they don't trade him. So they had the urgency to get that deal done. So when there was urgency on both sides were able to come to the table with what they had to offer. And obviously the Lakers had all those young guys, all those picks. And the Pelicans had the crown jewel in Anthony Davis. I think both sides can walk away happy with it. Both sides can walk away with maybe a little bit of regret in that they could have gotten a little bit more. Obviously, you know, the Pelicans got a ton of different kinds of things, but they, you know, if they could have gotten an extra piece in Kyle Kuzma or whatever they wanted that they didn't get, there's that side of it. And then obviously the Lakers have the side of it that they, you know, they could have done better a little bit in terms of the value play, in terms of not giving up as much in the picks department, as much in Josh Hart, stuff like that. But, you know, from a big picture perspective, both teams really got what they wanted out of this deal.
All right, before I cut you loose, I'm going to jump back to the Supermax and Lillard because, you know, it's a complicated thing, and I think people struggle with it. Is there an advantage to the Blazers waiting, doing it sooner rather than later? I know that report came right out, and I was trying to decipher, you know, they extend Terry Stotts, they extend Neil Olshey. They leak out that Lillard's got that Supermax, and they want to do it early. It felt to me like it was a little bit of public propaganda, like, hey, we've got some stability. Don't worry about ownership in that story that's going on in the background. What does going early with the Supermax mean for the Blazers on the balance sheet?
I think it's actually better for them to go as early as possible on the Supermax, because he's got 2 years left on his contract, the Supermax will kick in 2021, but because of the rules surrounding these Supermax extensions, the entire contract can't last more than 6 years total, including the 2 years that he has left. So that means you have 4 years of Supermax time on the back end of the current contract that he's on, starting in 2021 and ending in 2025. If you wait a year, then you just have an extra year of Supermax extension on the back end when Lillard is going to be a little bit older, is probably not going to be worth that contract in 2025-26. But if you do that earlier, then you can give him the Supermax, and you can have all of the positive PR that comes from that, the positive vibes in the locker room with Lillard being a Blazer for life, basically, at that point. But then you only have to pay out the 4 years of the Supermax rather than the full 5 years.
Today, Brooklyn declined to make a qualifying offer for Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. He'll be an unrestricted free agent. Again, it would come down to the Blazers paying, but I'd like him for their roster.
Yeah, I mean, if Aminu is looking to walk away and they can't replace him with somebody more expensive than a guy like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, taking a chance on him, he's a pretty solid defender. I think Aminu is better. Aminu is definitely a better outside shooter, but Hollis-Jefferson, draws a ton of fouls. Is somebody you can really give the ball to in on the block and let him go to work a little bit. He's not my favorite guy. I don't love what he brings to the table, but if you don't have a lot of money to spend and you need a starting power forward who can do some of the things that Aminu was doing last year, I think Hollis-Jefferson would be a decent option.
Jeff Siegel, earlybirdrights.com. Jeff, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Great stuff there. Some parting thoughts on Bol Bol and more next. Leave it right here. You got the bald-faced truth statewide on the BFT Radio Network. Been a great radio show. Make sure you get a podcast by going to Apple Podcasts, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play. Wherever you get a podcast, you can get a podcast of the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show. And in fact, I appreciate everybody who makes this show part of their day. It's important to us to be here for you. And I feel like we've been super informative at times, and maybe we've been fun at times. And certainly, I think if there's breaking news and there's something big going on, we're here. But we're here for you Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. And I'm on demand on the podcast. So if you are somebody who misses anything in any of the shows, you can just go to the podcast and get it. And if you're listening on the podcast, subscribe. Reach out and make a commitment. Come on, we make a commitment every day. We don't charge you for this. It's free. Just make a commitment to this radio show. Subscribe to the podcast so it's there for you. Also, give us a rating. Give us a review. Your reviews and ratings help other people find the podcast. I appreciate everybody who does that and gives us a review. Alabama Adriana does a cartwheel literally every time somebody gives the radio show a review. It's been a really good show. We've talked. I thought the segment, last segment with Early Bird Rights co-founder was fascinating, because it's really easy to say something's wrong, to throw out, hey, the Blazers roster needs to improve, without throwing out any real context around the roster and any real solutions. So I love that we have some solutions on today's show. If you missed any of that, grab a podcast of that one as well. Column I posted this morning on Bol Bol. I am fascinated by Oregon's Bol Bol. And can you call him an Oregon Duck? I mean, he was there for 9 games. But it's evident to me, and maybe to the rest of us, that the NBA teams value their draft picks. They do not mess around with their draft picks. And years ago, in front of the draft, the Trailblazers hired a high-profile investigative firm to conduct an investigation on Zach Randolph. Now, they liked Randolph as a player. They weren't looking for more reasons to draft Zach Randolph. They were looking for reasons to stay away from drafting Zach Randolph. Is there anything risky in his past? And there was some juvenile criminal stuff. There was a gun possession charge. There was a shoplifting charge. And so the Blazers hired this firm who had two ex- FBI agents go out and talk to neighbors and friends and coaches and teachers and his principal in high school. And the background check, which I have, got into his gun charge, his driving record, which happened to be clean, and it dug up the Walmart loss prevention citation from Randolph when he was 14. I mean, you think things don't matter. You think teams don't do their homework. I've got, you know, several hundred pages of files here from this report that show you that they went back to like age 12 with Zach Randolph and started looking at what he was up to, who he surrounded himself with. And keep in mind, his dad was incarcerated, his uncle was incarcerated, and his brother was incarcerated at the time that the Blazers drafted him. You're talking about a support system for Zach Randolph that was essentially non-existent. And it made sense. Like, as we got to know him, he was immature. He was a follower. I think he had a good spirit, sort of a likable spirit. He was a really good basketball player. If the Blazers had put tons of structure, or NBA team and whoever drafted Zach Randolph had put structure around him, I think he would be fine. And I think for the most part, he was, until later in his career, or just points of his career where he has friends around him. I think when he really got into being kind of the family man, Zach Randolph, when he was in Memphis for a stretch, I think you saw a settled down Zach Randolph. But a lot of questions about Bol Bol, and I am fascinated by him. Let's go down the list, the laundry list of Bol Bol. And on Thursday, he'll be at the Barclays Center. He will be part of the NBA draft show. Somebody's going to pick him in the first round. But I talked to three NBA teams in the last 2 weeks who have serious questions about Bol Bol. And they reached out. They wanted to know. They don't want to know what I think of him as a player. They just want to know, how did he conduct himself? I mean, they're talking to everybody, you know, all the way back to his high school teachers. And he went to three different high schools. It's kind of an interesting task that these teams take on. And so they're kind of at the point where they're reaching out to the sports columnist who barely spent any time with Bol Bol. You know, they've gotten everybody. I'm not sure I helped, because we barely saw him. He's long. He's a great shooter. He's got some skills. He's got a good handle for a young big guy, but he's not at all strong. He's fragile. And defensively, he struggled with basic concepts. You could see it in the early part of his time at Oregon. Now, the staff at Oregon will tell you they thought, hey, we're breaking through with him defensively, but that's what we saw in 9 games. The big thing with Bol Bol is that people are fascinated by him. He's 7'2". He's got potential. But the biggest question for him, and I think the reason why some NBA teams are hitting the pause button on Bol Bol, is his motor. Engaged, focused. When he's those things, he's terrific. But the rest of the time, he appears to kind of float through games, appears not to care, like, you know, as if the rest of us should just be honored we're getting to see him play. Two of the three NBA teams that I talked with told me that they had been in contact with teachers and staff at his three high schools as part of their research. That's fascinating to me, because he's gone to three different high schools. So you have NBA teams that are reaching back to Bol Bol's high school teachers that had him for like a semester and saying, what was he like? Because they have the biggest reference point, because he's jumped around so much, because he only played 9 games at Oregon, because he was an AAU guy that kind of found his way through things, that nobody seems to really connect with him or know him. They barely knew him too. But the reports that they got weren't strong. It was questions about his focus, questions about his sense of entitlement. And this is all sort of underscored by the idea that the draft is purely speculative anyway. So you're looking at NBA teams who are picking players going, I don't know, what do you think? You know, so I wouldn't be surprised to see Bol land late in the top 10. And I wouldn't be surprised either if he slipped into the 20s, even into the mid or late 20s. He had a really strong pro day. His stock is said to be rising. But I got to tell you, I would not draft Bol Bol. I would not draft him with a pick that I valued. And I would value a first round pick. And the reason why, and one NBA general manager told me this, he said, the league gives players reasons to quit every day. Think about that. Guaranteed contracts, the grind of a schedule, never-ending competition, injuries complicate things, right? With Bol Bol, who has jumped around and jumped around and jumped around and appeared aloof and not attached or connected at all, we have no proof that he will fight to matter under those circumstances. He has tons of upside, but I think too many questions in key places. I'd love to be wrong, but that is what I see when it comes to Bol Bol. Now, the Blazers ultimately picked Zach Randolph with the 18th pick in 2001, but they did a pile of homework on it. And again, They weren't looking for reasons to pick Zebo. They were looking for reasons not to pick Zebo. And I think Bol Bol are giving gives two NBA teams too many reasons not to pick him. All right. The bald-faced truth is not here for a long time, just a good time. Want you to enjoy your day. Appreciate everybody who makes this radio show part of their day. Again, grab a podcast, and we will see you back tomorrow on this radio show.